This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, Place to Be Nation, welcome to another episode of For Your Consideration, where we look at wrestlers for the greatest WWE wrestler ever project over at Place to Be Nation. And today we got a huge show for you. I've got my buddy Glenn, my buddy Steve. They've done shows here before. We have Dylan. Dylan's been on the, I guess we could call it the worst of the worst show, where we went over wrestlers that had no shot at making our list. And joining us for the first time is Dylan's brother Devin, who you can hear on the reaction shows with our buddy Chris Zellner. And so, guys, I'm happy to have all of you here. We've got a long show. Normally we do 12 wrestlers on these shows, but we have 16 wrestlers to talk about today. So everyone out there, sit back, relax. You know, if you have a long commute, you know, or a long drive across the country, this is the show that you're going to want to listen to get you through your day. So let's start. And we're going to start with Dylan first. Dylan, we have two wrestlers here, Scott Dawson and Dash Wilder, the Revival, and we're going to talk about them as kind of one entity because they've never been able to really shine on their own as singles wrestlers. So why don't you tell us what you think of the Revival, some of their high points, low points, if you're going to rank them or not, and we'll go from there.
So I think the Revival is kind of like, I think they sort of speak to one of the real challenges of this project, because we're not ranking acts. Right, we're ranking individuals. So you sort of have to make a choice. What does it mean if you have an act that is like incredibly transcendent for admittedly a relatively short period of time? What do you do with that? And I think the Revival is probably the single biggest challenge to think about when you think about that. Because from my personal perspective, they are already, as of this moment, no worse than the third best team in the history of the WWF. I mean, like, I might still have the Rockers above them, and I think Eminem is a super underrated team that I might consider, like, being lateral with them, or at least in the neighborhood. But there's even a possibility that I would have the Revival 2 or perhaps even number 1. And, you know, if you think through the history of the WWF tag team division, I'm not a person that thinks that the Golden Age of WWF tag teams is nearly as great as some people do. Like, I think the Hart Foundation is a good team, not a great team. I'm kind of indifferent to Demolition.
Yeah, they suck.
I love the Islanders, but I don't really see them as a team that has the blow-away level of great matches or was so central to a brand the way that the Revival was. Because really, after the NXT Women Revolution sort of ended, the next thing that happened was the tag teams, and the Revival was central to that. And I think really NXT lost a lot of their identity as the tag team division sort of has been faded out of prominence from that top position. The Revival, to me, in many ways, they were the most important aspect of NXT for around a year. Their matches, they already have, you know, last year I think I had two Revival matches in my top four matches from anywhere on the planet. I got an opportunity to see them work in house shows multiple times last year. I thought they were excellent there as well. I think they're probably the most consistently great act in the company over the course of the last 3 or 4 years in terms of producing high quality really every single time they're on screen, regardless of who they're wrestling or what the situation is. Obviously, they're an old school throwback team with sort of new school flair, so they're right in my wheelhouse for what my biases are. But really, the reason that I'm considering them is because, you know, if you love tag team wrestling as I do, I can't write off the team that is, in my mind, the best tag team to come down the pike in a decade. And I certainly can't write off a team that might be the best tag team in the history of the company. And like I said, is no worse than top three for me. I have to at least consider them, even though they have a relatively short stint in the company and a brief resume. And of course, it's difficult to decide what to do when you're ranking individuals, not teams.
Yeah, that's a good point. We're going to explore that theme more when we do the tag team show, and we're going to talk about teams like Demolition, the Hearts, the Rockers, teams that you had mentioned. So it's an interesting dilemma. Glenn, what are your thoughts on the Revival? Are you as high on them as Dylan?
Well, not quite top two or three team in company history high, but I mean, they're obviously great. I agree. It's very hard to get them on a list like this just because of the shortness of their run, despite great matches.
Okay. Did you have anything else to add, or should I move on to Devin?
No, let's go.
All right. Devin.
I pretty much agree with Dylan. I think I had, in fact, I definitely had the Revival DIY from Toronto as my number one match of the entire year last year. I think that's probably the best.
Hold on, DIY, that's Champasa. I can't even say his name. What's his name?
Gargano and Ciampa, yeah.
Ciampa, what's his last name? Tomasa?
That's his first name.
Yeah.
Tomato cilantro.
Shit, man. I'm not going to remember that. Devin. Sorry.
No. You're good. I think that was probably the best U.S. tag match since the Clash 91 tag. Probably. Okay. So, their Brooklyn tag was probably like a top 10 U.S. tag match of all time, too. Or at least since like 1990. They're hurt by just being a tag team and trying to fit two names. I'm considering them, but they wouldn't make it probably, you know, farther than my top five or top 10. But their resume is great for what they've done.
Okay. I'm having a hard time with this also, Steve, ranking tag teams. And I've already decided that if tag wrestling is primarily your only highlight really in the run, like, because I've repeated on previous shows, I don't care if, you know, the run is 1 year or 7 years, you know, it's the kind of like the positives versus the negatives in that run that I'm considering. How would you rank tag teams, Steve? Because like for someone like Dawson and Wilder, if they made my list, they'd just be back to back. They'd be like, you know, 62 and 63 or 41 and 42 or something. So I don't know, man. This is a kind of a dilemma that Dylan put me in. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm having a similar struggle with tag teams. Because it is a individual, I mean, you almost have to shine, you know, outshine your partner to be under consideration in my eyes. And, you know, you had the Rockers, if that's all they did, and so many more eyes seem to gravitate towards Sean than Marty, you know, Sean may have had a more of an edge on my list if the Rockers was all that they did. You know, obviously, in that particular case, Shawn Michaels far outweighed Marty in the long run. But with the Revival in particular, they're very similar. People do tend to gravitate more toward Dawson because of his look and some of his mannerisms. But they're both pretty much level with each other as far as their abilities go. I will second what Devin said about the Toronto match being the match of the year for 2016. I would go so far as to say it may be my all-time favorite finish, where they're both locked in the submissions, and it's like Thelma and Louise are holding each other's hands and begging each other not to quit before they both tap out at the same time. It's just spectacular storytelling.
That's a great analogy, man. You just compared them to Thelma and Louise. Showing your age, Steve. Continue.
I know, man, but I don't think they're going to make my list at this point just because they've been together for just about 2 years. And prior to that, Scott Dawson on his own wasn't doing much of anything. It would be interesting to revisit their case probably 5 years from now to see how they held up.
Okay, that's a fair point, right? When you have wrestlers like we're talking about today that are really fresh in our minds, sometimes you're not far enough removed from the era to kind of make an honest assessment. Like, you don't have time to let it sink in and digest. But let's move on to the next wrestler. And this one has an interesting career arc because he popped up in the early 2000s as a tag partner with Paul London. You know, he was a ROH superstar, indie darling. I got to see him when he wrestled for TWA, Shawn Michaels' promotion in San Antonio back in like 1999 and 2000. And he's made a resurgence this last year, and that's Brian Kendrick. And so Glenn, you picked Brian Kendrick. Does this guy have a shot at your list? I'm really interested in that.
I think he absolutely has a shot in the back half of my list, probably between like 60 to 80. And a lot of that is due to the additions that he's made in his recent comeback. I think that adds a lot to his resume as far as flexibility, the different roles that he's been playing. His comeback in the Cruiserweight tournament was fantastic storytelling as the veteran face trying to hold on to maybe some glory that he was losing and trying to stick it out against all of these younger, faster competitors with cunning and with knowledge and experience, and telling that story in every match that he had in that tournament. His win over Tony Nese, I thought, was very, very good. His match against Kota Ibushi was spectacular. Like, big emotional storytelling and great wrestling to try to convey that story. And then, you know, since then he's taken over the veteran heel spot, kind of holding together the Cruiserweight division when 205 Live started. And it might hurt him a little bit that his Cruiserweight title run at the beginning of 205 Live didn't go very well. And, you know, they had to bring in Neville to kind of take over as the top heel there. But still, it adds to his flexibility and adds to the different roles that he's played. And I loved his tag run with Paul London on SmackDown, getting long matches on those SmackDown-only pay-per-views because the roster wasn't big. And having good matches with inferior teams. Like, they elevated people like Damian Mizdow was on one of those teams, and Deuce and Domino, and people who were not as good, but they elevated them by working with them. That, I think, is a real feather in the cap for both of them. And then his heel run coming off of that as the Brian Kendrick, like, really made something out of nothing. I mean, that character was just, like, a one-line in-joke about Mike Adamley. And through the way that he portrayed it and just what he did in that character kind of turned it into something and kind of, like, forced his way into the scramble match for the title at Unforgiven 08, which was just a great performance by him and probably the highest he ever got on the card. And he shined in doing it. So, yeah, he definitely has a spot on my list.
Okay, Devin, I'm pretty interested in your take on this. Brian Kendrick.
I'm a pretty big fan of Kendrick myself. I pretty much agree with Glenn, although I do want to point out that I think people sort of forget this or don't even really realize it, that Kendrick and London were actually teaming on the SmackDown C Show Velocity during 03 and 04, and they have some good matches on there as well if people want to check those out. And I also want to say that Kendrick was amazing in the Cruiserweight Classic, but he didn't do all that great when he came to the main roster, although that's not entirely his fault because the booking of the Cruiserweight division has been terrible. So I don't know if people would want to penalize him for the last 8 months or not, although the Tozawa feud the last few months has been pretty good, and their street fight early in June was very good. But otherwise, I'm with Glenn.
So Kendrick's going to make your list?
He'll probably not as highly, but he's got a shot at my bottom 20 probably.
Okay, yeah, no shot at my list. Just throwing that up. That's because I'm an asshole. Steve, Brian Kendrick.
Probably not making my list. 2008, when he split off on his own, it was kind of doing 1992 Shawn Michaels. He was easily the highlight of the SmackDown roster for the second half of that year. And Glenn was right. He did shine in that championship scramble gimmick they did until he was squashed by Triple H. So there's one more transgression for Will's tab there.
What? Y'all didn't bring that up yesterday. I would have. Oh, man, come on.
The tag team title run in 2006 with Paul London was very good, but at times they would just disappear for 4 or 5 weeks without a mention. They had a long tag title reign, I believe the longest in several years, but at the same time, there wasn't a whole lot of emphasis put on them until it was time for the pay-per-views where they would have the long matches with, you know, Deuce and Domino and the Teacher's Pets and those kind of teams. The current angry old guy, Brian Kendrick, is a lot of fun, but I still don't see him making my list at this point.
Okay. Well, Dylan, your brother brought up an interesting point saying that, you know, he was a highlight on C shows like Velocity. Now, what do you do with guys like that? Like your Chris Masters, your Drew McIntyre's, your Brian Kendrick's and Paul London's, you know, who are kind of like these C show superstars, as I call them. And I have a spot on my list for guys like that. I don't know. I'm just curious if you think the same, or if you think that being a guy on your C show is something that hurts you, if that's where you're mainly featured.
I don't think it necessarily hurts you. I guess my view of that would be that it can be an additive to a case that exists on other merits. But I don't think it's enough for that to be your entire case, right? Like, I think if your best argument was that you were the best C-show worker in 2010, you probably are not one of the 100 best people for this list. Like, and I say that as somebody who was the single biggest Chris Masters advocate on the planet at the time. So that's just kind of how I feel about it, especially given the criteria that's sort of laid out. As for Kendrick himself, I don't think he's a bad sort of fringy candidate, but I actually don't think, like, I mean, for example, the Lundrick team I love, but if you look at it from the perspective of jump up moments, which is, you know, also part of the criteria that we're talking about, big moments, they had maybe one big moment, which was the ladder match where Joey Mercury got his face busted open and they sort of overcame the Hardys and the Blue Bloods and all those guys. And it was great. It was well done, but name a single other moment they had as a team that really stands out. I can't think of one. And while I think Kendrick stood out big time in the Cruiserweight Classic, I don't think we can ignore the fact that the moment that he was on a show that was live and not pre-taped, the juice was gone. Whether that's because the show was live and not pre-taped, or I don't know. But
I think it's the audience, man. The audience.
I think that's probably true. However, I'm very suspicious of guys where the gap is that big between point A and point B when you go from a pre-tape environment to a live setting. Like, it's just, as somebody who goes to see a lot of live wrestling, that means a lot to me what you can do in front of a live audience. So I don't dislike Kendrick. I think he's perfectly viable as like sort of a back of the list guy, but you know, to make a head-to-head comparison to the two guys we just discussed, it would be difficult for me to rank him above either Dawson or Wilder, and I'm not even sure those guys will make my list.
Okay, and then that's a fair point. And this next guy that we're going to talk about, he's an interesting case because he was kind of at the forefront. I mean, he was never a main eventer except for, like, maybe one Raw main event or something. He was never somebody who I looked at as like that the company would ever get behind, even though he's one of those guys who got over organically. And I'm talking about Zack Ryder. And to me, he's an interesting case because he's not really a great wrestler, Devin, but he, for a period there, could have arguably been the most over babyface on the roster. Why did you pick Zack Ryder, Devin?
That's one of the big reasons why. I'm a big Zack Ryder fan. He's actually been in the company for 10 years. He and I believe it was Curt Hawkins were as the Major Brothers in 2007 on SmackDown.
Weren't they Edge's lackeys?
Yep.
So that has to hurt him on your list, right? You're not a big Edge guy.
No, not at all. I started to become a Ryder fan when he went to ECW and started just having, you know, some pretty good matches with, you know, guys like Shelton Benjamin, and had some good matches with Christian. Of course, Christian was having good matches with everybody at the time. But Ryder held his own, and he started to build up his, internet champion character over the next few years. And like you mentioned, the thing about him is, I feel like he has to be at least at least talked about because he was able to get himself over despite the booking. He made himself over with his internet champion stuff back in 2010, 2011. And in the fall of 2011, when he was feuding with Dolph Ziggler over the U.S. title, they had the angle where Hugh Jackman came in and punched Dolph Ziggler and helped him win the match or whatever. And he was arguably the most over babyface on Raw. Every Monday he would usually, you'd get We Want Ryder chants and stuff like that. And he was one of the more popular guys on the roster for about 6 months or so. And you have to give him credit for that because he did get himself over with his internet champion stuff. He doesn't have classic matches. But he always works really hard. He's one of those guys who is always busting his ass on the shows. The WrestleMania 32 moment was a really cool moment for him when he won that ladder match. He was kind of a C-show warrior for a few years there as well. I'm a fan of the Hype Bros. I think they're a fun tag team.
Oh, you're killing me. Keep going.
But he's someone who doesn't have great matches, but he always, was able to dish out 3-star matches, and works really hard. But I think the big part of his case and the part where I'm considering him probably somewhere in my bottom five would be that period in 2011 where he built himself up and got himself really over and had a nice run for about 6 months to a year there. And the stuff before and after, I think, is enough cushioning to possibly get him in my bottom five.
Okay, well, my bottom five has 12 wrestlers currently in it, so I'm kind of at a tough spot there. Steve Williams, are you a Zack Ryder fan? Are you are you part of the Ryder Nation here? What's going on?
That 2011 period, I was all in just because, Vince McMahon for the last X amount of years has made such a big deal about guys grabbing the brass ring and not waiting for their gift, just to go out and take it. And he did just that. He went on his own, spent money to produce these videos, was entertaining as hell in doing so. And if you look at the way this guy's built, he looks like what Vince McMahon's creator wrestler would be. He must just be a complete geek or something backstage for them not to have invested something in this guy. At the end of that year, 2011, he won the U.S. title. Things were looking great for him. And then in a very short period of time, he lost the title. John Cena took his girlfriend. Kane put him in a wheelchair and pushed him off the stage. Eve Torres kicked him in the balls at WrestleMania. They did everything they could to castrate this guy over the next 4 months. And outside of the WrestleMania win on that ladder match last year, he hasn't done too much of anything since then. As much as I like that 2011 run, I just can't justify putting him on my list.
Man, that's right. And you know the sad thing, because I used to watch those Ryder YouTube videos. The booking in those YouTube videos was better, and the writing was better than the writing on the main roster. And I'll have no problem saying that to anybody. Dylan, interesting case here, Zack Ryder.
Well, to me, I'm a big fan of guys who are more over than their push. That actually is sort of like a sub criteria for me with this. So in that regard, Ryder sort of has an advantage with me that maybe he doesn't with some other people, because I do tend to value that. I also value guys who I think are, utility players that show value up and down the cards and can be plugged into a bunch of different spots. One thing I'll really say for him is that when he has been pushed in main event feuds or upper mid-card feuds, because for the majority of his run, he's been a mid-carder or jobber to the stars level type guy. But when he has been given a push, I've never felt he was out of place. Whereas a lot of times with guys that get elevated up, it's kind of like, really, what's the deal? And I've never felt that way with Ryder. I think largely because he is a good worker, and he does have some charisma, so when they do put him in those spots, he's actually pretty effective. I thought the Miz feud last year, which really hasn't been mentioned, was actually quite good. And I think, actually, in some ways, he was sort of the perfect opponent for Miz to get his heat on to start his really super hot heel run, because Ryder was a sort of beloved underdog babyface that I think a lot of the crowd really wanted to do well. So Miz screwing him over, I think, was almost the ideal person for Miz to get over on. He's one of probably about 10 to 15 guys that I'm sort of considering throwing at my number 100 spot. I could not in good conscience throw him any higher, but he is one of those guys that I think the combination of longevity in a quality way, where he was adding at least something to the shows, being a good C-show performer, and sort of having some big moments and living up to the hype when he was given opportunities, does make him sort of feel like a Mr. Irrelevant candidate for my list.
Well, that's fair. I don't know. I think Little Tokyo is holding down the fort at 100 on my list. It'd be hard to crack that Little Tokyo barrier. What do you say here, Glenn? Zack Ryder, making your list or not making your list?
Oh, I want him to, but I don't know if he will. I'm going to try to get him in like in the 90s maybe, but I'm not sure. I mean, I'm a fan of the Hype Bros too. And his run in ECW I thought was very, very good. But, you know, the highlight matches, for the most part, just aren't there. I mean, the match with John Cena during the U.S. Open Challenge period was probably his best match since Christian. And there was a long time in between there. So it's hard.
Yeah, that's a fair point. Yeah. I'll tell you what, though, when it comes to Ryder, I think he made Dolph Ziggler more interesting in those YouTube videos than Dolph has ever been on the main roster, with the exception as Vicky Guerrero's boy toy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, we'll be getting there.
Yeah. Oh, that's right. Dolph Ziggler. We're talking about him today. So, yeah, let's not spoil it. Let's keep this party rolling, man. Steve, this next guy that you picked, Sami Zayn, is pretty interesting, because for a year, he was an NXT superstar, man. I mean, he was pumping out great angles, great matches. Like, he felt like this guy you could believe in. But then he gets to the main roster and he becomes the underdog of the underground. And I don't know, man. You're going to have to sell me on Sami Zayn, especially after he hit the main roster. To be fair, I've not kept up with the product as much since he's been on the main roster. But I don't know, man. Sami Zayn feels kind of bubbly to me. What's your take on Sami Zayn?
Sami Zayn, the last half of 2014, was, in my opinion, the best babyface on the WWE roster or NXT roster. He was a guy that you just could not dislike. He was working hard. He kept coming up just short, but you could tell the greatness was within his reach, you know, on that NXT level. He finally wins the title, and of course the old Tommy Dreamer deal where he wins the title and then it all falls apart immediately. His best friend turns on him 2 minutes later. He drops the title on his first defense to Kevin Owens. And then he gets called up and manages to get hurt during his ring entrance, which is just a spectacular folly that I don't think anybody else has performed. Just throwing his arm up and his shoulder dislocates. It's insanity. Has to take some time off, and now he's been embroiled on and off with Kevin Owens for probably the first year of his run. And now he's pushed as almost this annoying guy who manages to get himself in the way and on the wrong people's radars. He might make my list just based on that 2014 NXT run where he was such a believable babyface.
And oh, that Cesaro series was classic.
Yeah, and as somebody who's familiar with his work, probably going back 15 years, seeing him transition from a guy who worked under a mask his entire career to watching him emote so well and connect with the crowd with these great facial expressions is just fantastic. He's probably going to make the bottom quarter of my list.
Okay, Dylan?
I don't want to be the wet blanket, but...
Be the wet blanket, man. Come on, let's keep
please, that energy. Please do.
To me, Sami Zayn has been badly exposed on the main roster. Like, I was kind of a moderate on El Generico on the Indies. I was not a huge fan, but I was not a visceral opponent. I thought he was good, but not like I didn't necessarily see him as the blowaway great guy that a lot of people did. I admit that that's also possible because I didn't see him live, you know, other than maybe once. But the, you know, then he got into NXT, and I thought I was wrong about this guy. This guy is the babyface for the future. I thought he had the potential to be the sort of heir to Rey Mysterio as being this underdog babyface whose sympathy selling got him over with everybody, and he just was able to connect across a wide swath of fandom, which is one of the things that I think made Rey such a tremendous performer. And then he got to the main roster, and we can talk about booking and presentation. I think we all agree that it's not been ideal for him. But one thing that I think guys can control when they get to the main roster, and I think we've seen that with a lot of people, and we'll see that with a lot of people we discuss on this list, is they can control, by and large, whether or not they have quality matches. And Sami Zayn, to me, the role the company needs him to play or needed him to play was that guy, again, sort of the Rey Mysterio guy or Cesaro from a couple years ago, who was going to give you a quality match no matter where they put him in the card, whether it was a mid-card match, whether he got sort of a throwaway title match on TV or whatever. And the reality is his resume for TV matches is not very impressive for a guy who's allegedly a super worker and a guy who was as good as he was in NXT. And again, it makes me wonder, is there something different between a guy wrestling in a setting where he knows it's taped and he's almost a studio setting versus wrestling in front of a live television audience? I mean, obviously you could say, well, the Nakamura match was live as well as the other TakeOver matches and those were hits. And I think that's a fair sort of counter. But the reality is week to week on TV, he just does not have anywhere near the level of output that I would expect or want based on what I know he's capable of. And for that reason alone, he has no chance at my list.
Wow. Okay, Glenn, where do you fall on Sami Zayn? We got two polar opposites here, man.
I'm a bigger fan of his week-to-week TV matches. I think there's a pretty high kind of baseline of quality there. But
and hold on. Just having said that, can you point to any? Like, for someone like me who hasn't, like, really kept up with, like, the week-to-week TV matches.
I think he's gotten more out of Baron Corbin than anyone has any right to. Just okay. Thinking about the last couple of months or so. I'm not going to tell you to go watch Baron Corbin matches, though. I'm sorry.
Okay, I appreciate that. Thanks for the heads up.
But otherwise, I do think it's really sad what's happened to him since he came to the main roster, because I am a huge, huge fan of just the pure babyface, which is rare to see now. Someone who is just good. When we did the women's show, I said the same thing about Bayley, I think, that Sami Zayn is the sort of babyface who picked up the title belt to hit Kevin Owens with it, and the crowd started yelling, "No, don't do it, don't do it." That sort of like pure babyface is so rare now, and they don't right. know how to book that on the main roster. Like, they can create it on NXT sometimes, but they don't know how to sustain it.
And they haven't been able to do that for years, man. I agree with that. So
despite some great, great matches, I think he might fall off my list.
Oh, wow. Tough break for Sami Zayn, just like that shoulder dislocation. Devin, real quick, are you agreeing with your brother here? Because, I mean, man, we were there live last year in Dallas, man. He was the most over guy in that ladder match, man. People were wanting Sami Zayn to win that thing.
I think he has a little bit more of a chance to make my list because I do love his NXT run a whole lot. But for someone who has watched way too much WWE TV in the last 2 years.
Yeah, way too much, man. You need to get healthy.
He really hasn't had a lot of high-quality TV matches, in my opinion, and I agree with Dylan there. So that really hurts him. And I also think he, depending on who his opponent is, he gets in the tendency, like in the Kevin Owens matches, to work a strong style, trading back-and-forth moves. Let's no-sell suplexes stuff, which I'm not a fan of. And I think he's much better at selling underneath, and he doesn't do that quite enough for my liking. But, yeah, I he's on the bubble, but he might not make it.
Man, I don't know. You know what? We didn't bring this up, and I'm just going to mention it. I kind of liked him getting beat up by Braun Strowman, you know, that little mini feud. Like, I was actually invested in that match where Braun Strowman beat him up for 10 minutes and he survived. It wasn't like a real great Sami Zayn performance, but I enjoyed it. That's just all I'm going to say on that. Yeah, he's on my bubble list too, man. You know, I got him like at 93 right now, right above Haiti Kid. So, you know, we'll see how that shakes out. moving on, Dylan. This next guy is a guy similar to like Zack Ryder in that he's been around forever. He kind of gets himself over no matter what they do with him. But again, just the great matches, man. I'm trying to look for those classic matches for guys on this list. It's kind of hard to find. And I'm talking about Heath Slater. Why don't you talk about why you wanted to put Heath Slater on today's discussion?
Well, the reason I wanted to discuss him is I think throughout the project, like if you're following along, you know, via the Facebook group or the Pod Blast or, you know, even Twitter conversation or whatever, I think that there's sort of the spot for the jobber, like the beloved jobber that a lot of people are throwing out there. People are, you know, talking about the pros and cons of Barry Horowitz or the Brooklyn Brawler. Some people have been talking about Johnny Rod, you know, like, and I get that. I appreciate that. I think that that's an important role. But I think that the sort of modern equivalent of that are guys that don't really get talked about as much because they're not, you know, because we're living through their era, there's no like charm and, you know, Heath Slater for some people. I don't know. It's just strange. I guess my argument for including him in this discussion is if we're going to be considering people that are sort of on that lowest rung, I think he's got a really compelling case to be like the best possible version of that, right? Like, he's been super entertaining in every role they've used him. There have been times where he's been almost the only watchable thing on Raw. Like, I guess a couple of years ago, like, and there, when he first came over to SmackDown after the most recent brand split, he was like the most over thing in WWE or close to it, other than maybe AJ. I love the angle that they did with him and Rhino. To win the tag belts, I thought it was super well executed. It was probably the only good thing that the WWE's done in the tag division in SmackDown since the brand split in some ways. I thought that his 3MB run was like the perfect sort of comedy undercard run. And we can talk about how it was a waste of the talent of all those guys that they weren't pushed harder. And I think there's some truth to that. But if the WWE is going to do the sort of comic relief undercard, jobber to the star level guys, I at least want them to be very, very entertaining and add something to the show that nobody else can possibly add. And I feel like Slater is one of those guys. You know, to me, Slater and Santino Marella are like the two best guys they've ever had in that role. I don't think that there's like, I don't even know who else would even be in the discussion for that. And they've tried a lot of different people in that spot. And those are the only two people who I really feel connect with like a broad swath of the audience, add something different, and also can work when you give them an opportunity to work. Does he have classic matches? No, he's never going to in that position. Is that enough of a reason to completely disqualify him? Maybe, depending on, you know, how you're, you know, valuing things. But I feel like if you're the type of person who's going to be considering those low undercard, jobber to the star, almost pure enhancement guys, I think Slater has as strong a case as anybody, if not stronger.
Okay. Yeah, he's not making my list, man. And I think it's just because I have something against his red hair, but who knows? Orange hair. It's actually like more orange than red, right? Like, it's a really orangey color. Anyway, Glenn, your thoughts on Heath Slater?
I think it's amazing the way he got himself over last fall. I think it's one of the stronger arguments for a brand split is that it allows like more space for things like that to happen. But that alone, I don't think overcomes having been so anonymous for so much of his run. And a lot of the stuff with the core and the Nexus, like on weekly TV, was just tedious. So, no, he doesn't have a shot at my list.
What about you, Devin?
I think he probably not much of a shot at my list, but I will say that I have enjoyed him, and I do want to point out that the 2012 deal where he was getting beat up by legends was a lot of fun, and the Bill Durant 1000.
Oh, I remember that, man. That's right. I have this picture of like Dylan holding the knife to your side, saying, "You better vote for this guy." You know. Anything else you want to say, Devin, before I move on to Steve?
No, man.
You're like, nah, I'm good. Steve, Heath Slater, any chance of making your list?
No, I had initially dismissed him altogether, but I've kind of been taking some notes here while you guys have been talking. He debuted in the hottest angle of 2010 with the NXT rookies taking over the roster and becoming Nexus. It's kind of silly, if I'm not mistaken. Is it now just him and Darren Young that are the only guys left in active wrestling roles from that? The two guys I would thought for sure wouldn't have lasted the year have gone on to be the last men standing in that. Whenever there's a high-profile spot where somebody needs to show some ass, they put Heath Slater in that position. He confronted Flo Rida at WrestleMania one year and got shoved into the wall. There was a deal in 2012 with the Legends that was probably my highlight of his career. He's a guy that the company does have some faith in. And let's not overstate, or not overlook, I should say, his role in WLC, which is probably the best damn underrated gem of a match of all time.
The greatest pre-show match that they've done since the network.
Oh, easily.
Unless it's one of those Goldust Cody tags. That
right. Still wrong. And then last year, he was put in a position where he should have failed as the one guy who wasn't even good enough to be drafted when they literally drafted everybody. And he turned that around and made it work, was able to help resurrect Rhino's career, and got himself over just by saying, "I got kids and I need to work." I mean, Heath might end up slipping into my bottom five now that I've looked at some of his high points of his resume over the last 7 years.
So we're going to have Dylan do a double cross on Devin. Steve and Dylan team up against Devin and Glenn in this battle for the soul of Heath Slater, man.
He's okay. Ginger. He has no soul.
Yeah. Oh, man. Well, we're going to talk about another ginger and a couple of wrestlers here. But first, let's talk about a guy you included, Glenn. And we're talking about Shinsuke Nakamura. For me, he's hard, man, because he debuted in what, to date, is probably still his best match in the company. And that's the match he had against Sami Zayn in his debut at NXT in Dallas. Dylan and Devin, y'all were there for that live, right?
No, actually.
No? Oh, okay. But we were all in Dallas that weekend.
And yes.
Dude, y'all went to like 15 shows that weekend.
We were at Ring of Honor that night.
Oh, okay. Well, so anyway, Glenn, talk about Shinsuke's case here, because I'm having a hard time putting him on my list because I just keep waiting for him to do something on the main roster. What's your take on Shinsuke?
More than anyone else, I think, on the main roster right now, I think Nakamura might be helped the most by what he does in the next several months while this voting period is still open. I want to see what he does at SummerSlam and maybe some of the pay-per-views after that. I hope that might bolster him a lot, because so far on the main roster, you're right, he hasn't made that much of an impression. Part of that is being saddled with Dolph Ziggler, but again, we'll get there later. His debut match against Sami Zayn, obviously, I think is his best one. He had a great match with Finn Balor on NXT TV last summer as well, leading up to his first title match. And I know there are lots of divergent opinions on the Samoa Joe series. I think they probably peaked with like the first or second one, and then they had several more. But still, I think Nakamura just provides a different feel from so many of the other people on the roster, especially in NXT. Again, the main roster so far has been iffy. Whether that's enough to get him on a list, I really don't know. Like I said, I will be looking to the next few months for him, but I think he's interesting to consider.
Okay, so he's a wait and see, and I was gonna say, man, I forgot what I was gonna say. I'm slow. Anyway, let's move on. I am Devin Nakamura. Any shot at your list so far? Oh, I know what I wanted to say. Just so people know, this show is being taped in advance from when you're hearing it. So SummerSlam might have already happened by the time the show comes out. Just wanted to throw that out there. Okay, go, Devin.
No, he's not going to make my list. I hated the Joe series. Loved
wow,
the same
hey.
I couldn't, like, the first match is fine, but I feel like each match got like worse and worse. Like I couldn't, the Joe series wasn't doing it for me at all. To me, he's a guy like, I mean, I don't blame him for it, but he's one of those like, put in 50% and half-ass it on TV, and it's just not all that interesting to me. Like he does his bits. His formula isn't as interesting as somebody else who's coasting in their formula, in my opinion. Okay. I do love the Sami Zayn match, but and I actually like the Rude matches okay too. But I don't know why they paired him with Dolph Ziggler. We'll get to that later. He's not gonna make mine.
What about you, Steve? Any shot?
Now, I was at the Dallas Takeover show where he wrestled Sammy.
Ooh.
And that was one of the most insane live experiences I've ever had. It was easily a top five live show I've ever attended. That being said, he has been wildly inconsistent. His good stuff is very good, but oftentimes he is, you know, for lack of a better word, lazy and relying on mannerisms. You know, his debut match with Dolph on the main roster, that was one of those times where you want to kick it up a notch, and they just did not do that at all. He's probably not making my list.
Okay. And you know, you brought something up where you said it was one of the most insane live experiences. And I hear that with NXT often, because when I was in Toronto, Dave Musgrave and Stephen Graham both told me that when they went to that NXT Toronto Takeover show, that was one of the most insane live experiences that they had ever been to. So that's interesting. Dylan, real quick, Shinsuke.
Well, I've actually seen Nakamura live a lot, because I've been to a lot of NXT house shows and I've been to multiple NXT takeovers. And so speaking, you know, on that point, I would say that he's super charismatic. That comes across live. The matches are almost never particularly good displays. I mean, I was live for the first Nakamura Rude match, the title change in San Antonio, and I did think that was a great match. I'm a guy who really liked that match. I know that's kind of polarizing. That's actually probably my second favorite match he's had in the company, other than the aforementioned Sami Zayn match. I was also at a house show in Charleston, which was one of the first shows he worked in the States shortly after the Dallas show last year, where a fan was so excited that Nakamura was coming out that was right in front of me that he ripped his shirt off and took his brand new iPhone and spiked and smashed it on the ground while screaming Nakamura's name. So
that
was one of the most entertaining spectacles I've ever seen in a wrestling show, although I'm not sure I should give Nakamura credit for it. I think the Miller High Life deserves credit for that. But I just don't think there's really any resume there at all. I actually think he has a paper. I mean, to me, Psycho Sid has a better resume than Nakamura at this stage. Like he just doesn't have any meat on the bone whatsoever. I actually think in some ways he hurt NXT, by being there as long as he was. I think that's not his fault, but I feel like they should have called him up way sooner. And, you know, barring some major, major developments in the last 6 months of this year, which I suppose are possible, I don't see how he has even a 5% chance of making my list.
Okay, yeah, and he's one of those guys where I'm just waiting for him to blow me away because I'm so invested in this guy, right? Just the mannerisms and the charisma. Like, I want him to succeed. I'm rooting for him. It's just now he has to deliver the goods. So time will tell on that one. This next guy, by far one of my favorite wrestlers. I think I have him in the top half on a relatively short run that's kind of devoid of any main event spots, and that's Cesaro. Devin, why don't you praise Cesaro endlessly here, because I think he should be on everybody's top half. I just think he's an amazing worker.
Oh yeah, he's one of the best. He's one of the probably five best workers of this decade in the entire world probably. He was the best wrestler in the world. He was the best wrestler in the world in 2013. You know, he was having four and a half, you know, like four, maybe not four and a half star, but you know, like four and a quarter star matches with Kofi Kingston on main event, and having three star matches with Great Khali, and having really good matches with Babyface Miz, which is the only Miz I never liked, that's tough to do. He had the classic Sami Zayn series, the amazing William Regal match, which ended up being Regal's final match of his career. He's got the awesome tag teams with numerous tag partners, with Jack Swagger and the Real Americans, with Tyson Kidd. This Sheamus tag team has been awesome. Their best of seven series in the fall was real good. He's the best TV worker in WWE. He and Sheamus, who we'll get to in a few minutes, are the two best TV workers since Ray in WWE. So he's definitely making my list. He'll be somewhere in the middle, probably 40s, 50s, 60s, somewhere, just depending. His in-ring work is so good that it's hard for me to not put him in my list in a good place. And he got over with the crowds because of how good he is in the ring, all of his amazing strength spots. I really think that first Cena match in February of 2014 really got him over with the crowd. When they were having the matches build into the chamber match, that really helped him get over. He was hurt by being paired up with Paul Heyman. I think Paul Heyman, outside of Brock Lesnar, has really hurt a lot of wrestlers that he's been paired up with. And Cesaro was a victim of Heyman, I think. And that hurt him in 2014. His injury also didn't help, because he had come back after Heyman had hurt him, and he had gotten really good, and he had had a pair of awesome matches with Cena for the U.S. title. I believe the June 29th and the July 6th 2015 Raws. And then he messed up his shoulder. But he came back and was just as good as ever, having really good matches again, as always. He's, you know, like I said, one of the 5-10 best wrestlers in the world of this decade.
Yeah, you mentioned it. I would argue, too, that he's one of the best tag team wrestlers ever, because he's taken guys that were meaningless. Tyson Kidd, Jack Swagger at the time was doing nothing, and had great tag team runs with these guys. So he might, you know, and not to mention like his tag team with Hero, which doesn't count for this project, as the Kings of Wrestling, which I'm a bigger fan of than like Dylan, but still. Steve Williams, Cesaro, making your top 50 or making your top 50?
Probably making my top 100, I'll say that.
What the hell, man? Come on.
He's
putting Triple H in your top 25, but Cesaro, he might make my list. Come on. Killing me here, Steve.
It is based purely off work is why he's making the list at all, because for whatever reason, this company refuses to put faith in this guy when he clearly deserves it. That crowd went absolutely apeshit for him coming off that 2014 WrestleMania Battle Royal win, and it seemed like it was going to be the time to propel him, and then there was just no worthy follow-up after that. In that 2014 Chamber match, he was just incredible. Just a real revelation of a performance. You know, you mentioned the great teams of Swagger and, of course, the great team with Tyson Kidd. He's somebody I really need to go back and delve deeper into. He's honestly probably going to be in my top 75.
You're sick. Triple H in your top 25. Cesaro in top 20. For the record, I have Cesaro currently at 31, and he might move up too. So, Dylan?
Yeah, I mean, look, my philosophy is, if at any point I thought you were, like, for a full calendar year,
if at any point I thought you were the best wrestler in the world, you're definitely making a WWE-centric list top 100. And in 2013, I thought he was the best wrestler in the world. So for that reason alone, he would make my list, even if he did nothing else whatsoever. As it stands, you know, he has a lot of meat to his resume. I think one of the things about Cesaro that really stands out to me is that he really was the closest thing, I think, since Rey Mysterio to that sort of complete, unbelievably great television worker. Like, he'd show up on NXT and have a great matches with Sami Zayn or Bo Dallas or whoever, and then he'd show up, like, the next week on Main Event and have, like, a 4.5-star Match of the Year candidate versus Sheamus on a C show, you know, and then he'd be on Raw. Other than Ray at his peak, and perhaps also I do think there may be an outside case for Sheamus being similar, I don't think there's been anybody like that. And I mean, that's huge to me because it shows that consistency across multiple mediums and not just delivering on the big shows. This is a guy who delivers on every show. And I think that to me personally is really important. I can also say that he's a guy who works really hard on house shows too, which also matters to me. Again, as I mentioned, I go to a lot of shows live. So, you know, if you're the type of guy who's going to phone it in on a house show, that's going to hurt you with me. And Cesaro does not do that. So, you know, I do agree with Steve's point that, like, the company not investing in him as much as I think hardcore fans would like is disconcerting. However, I don't, like, he's not a good promo, or he hasn't shown himself to be a good promo in the WWE, at least, even when given occasional opportunities. And I think at this point, I'm pretty much happy with where Cesaro is. If his entire career is upper mid-card guy or talented tag team wrestler, do I think it's a shame that he never got a hot main event run? Yeah, but I don't consider it this horrifyingly grave injustice either, because he's so good at what he does, and what he does is so valuable that it doesn't detract from me or make me enjoy the show less just because he's not working in the main events.
Yeah. Okay, Glenn, top 25 or top 35?
Sure. I think it's really interesting to hear people talk about him being the best wrestler in 2013, because 2013 was a sort of gap year for me. I watched maybe 2 wrestling shows that year. Otherwise, I was completely out of the fandom. Summer 2012, I peaced out. I felt traumatized by all the Rock Cena stuff. And so 2013, I watched the Royal Rumble, and The Rock won the title, and Cena won the Rumble, and I said, fuck it, they're not doing it to me again, and I peaced out. I think the next show I saw was SummerSlam, which was a good show to see, but still. So, there are a lot of these week-to-week matches from 2013 I still need to go look up, because I didn't start watching...
That's your homework.
That's why I was writing down some as your
matches.
I didn't start watching again until 2014. I joined up with the Place to Be and the network started and got back in on that. And so 2014 was the year for me to be amazed, like, every week on Raw, holy shit, this guy is amazing. with his strength spots and his smoothness and his 7 million different European uppercuts. It's just blew my mind. Like, all through, like, the spring and summer of 2014 in the, like, Place to Be chat group, I was like, holy shit, this guy's amazing. This guy's amazing. And everyone else was basically saying, yeah, where have you been? So obviously he's amazing. Obviously he has the great matches. The Cena ones in 2015 were mind-blowing at the time. So, yeah, he absolutely has a spot, absolutely, in the top half.
Okay, thank you, Glenn. Shit, top half, 30. Anyway, I would just like to say that Cesaro is almost like the perfect gateway guy. And you can slot him at the main event. He's going to look credible there. But he's also like the guy where you have to go through him to get to the main event. I kind of like him as that guy. And just says something that when you're one of the best at everything you do in the ring, I mean, like you said, he's not getting over on his character work, his promo. He's getting over purely on talent in the ring and staying over. And I just can't overlook that, man. Amazing wrestler. Another guy I think is kind of underlooked, because I know some people just viscerally hate this guy. And I don't know why, because I think he's an amazing wrestler. And I'm talking about Sheamus. Steve, what's your take on Sheamus? Because I think he's been very consistent as a wrestler, even if his character has kind of gone through some peaks and valleys in that time in the company.
Yeah, I'm not as big on Sheamus as a lot of people are. He's not bad at all. I mean, he's nowhere near the level of dislike that I have for, say, a Chavo Guerrero.
You're one of those guys? Oh, you're killing it, Steve.
He suffers from the current WWE mentality of, for every big win, you have to have a big loss. You know, he's been essentially in a near similar spot for the last 7-8 years, outside of a couple of short title runs. And I think he's done well when given the ball. He just doesn't do it for me. He's not somebody I actively avoid. You know, I watch his matches and I'm usually entertained, but I, for the most part, cannot really get invested in Sheamus at this point. I think the current stuff he's doing now with the tag team is pretty good. And again, that's with Cesaro, so of course it's going to be good. He's might make my list, but he's somebody I need to really look into with a fresh set of eyes.
Yeah, you do, man, because you're hurting my heart right now. Anyway, I just want to throw that out there. What do you say there, Dylan? I mean, I know you're a big Sheamus backer, so hype Sheamus up for us here.
I mean, I think he's probably the most unfairly maligned wrestler around other than maybe Reigns, in the sense that he gets blamed for, you know, things that, like, let's just be honest, like, there's this huge segment of the WWE fan base that hates him because the WWE booked him to go over Daniel Bryan at 18 seconds at WrestleMania. The reality is that that's the best thing that ever happened to Daniel Bryan's career, because that's really when he took off as a phenomenon. That's when the whole Yes deal started. But that's not how people see it. They see it as Sheamus is shoved down our throats and we hate him and blah, blah, blah. I mean, I think it's like a, you know, sort of like a Pavlovian response from hardcore wrestling fans of a certain type, that if the WWE pushes a guy with muscles over a guy who wrestled on the indies, you're morally obligated to hate him forever or something. It's very stupid. I actually have no respect for it as a point of view. But I think a lot of that's a problem. I think he also he's gotten a lot of cheap shots from Meltzer at times, frankly. But if you actually look at his output, I mean, there's very, very, very few guys in that company who have had as many good matches in the last decade as Sheamus. I'm not even sure that I could name five who've had as many. Cesaro and Cena might be it. He just week to week, match to match, opponent to opponent, delivers time and time again. Tremendous television match worker. I think that is something that goes a long way with me. Has his character been crappy and cringeworthy at times, especially when they tried to make him, you know, Cena poopy joke with an Irish accent? Yeah, okay, that sucked. I don't think anybody's disputing that. On the other hand, at times his character's had a lot of utility, and I think the biggest example is the only time that Roman Reigns has gotten pure babyface reactions since, you know, he also became a victim of not being Daniel Bryan.
A poopy joke babyface?
The only
time... Is that what we're going to call him now when they try to make those bad molds, poopy joke baby faces?
I mean, that's kind of what it is. But I mean, the only time that Reigns has not gotten that sort of go away heat or we hate you heat from a huge segment of the crowd was when he wrestled Sheamus. He got authentic babyface heat throughout most of that, actually all of that. Those couple matches they had, I can't remember the timeline, but they were both great matches too. So my personal view is he delivers on a consistent basis.
He's been good in a variety of roles up and down the card. It's funny. I remember when he debuted, a lot of people looked at it and went, oh, God, look, Goldust is carrying this schlub on ECW. Well, it turns out that schlub was good all along. You know, he was good from the very beginning when he first debuted. He does something that I love in wrestling, which is he's a guy who has multiple finishers. He has, like, he's used, like, five or six different spots for finishers, which means his matches always have hot near-fall segments. They always have hot sort of dramatic finishing runs. I love that. I'm a huge mark for that. I think, you know, for all the criticism that he gets about how he was pushed in relation to Daniel Bryan with the 18 seconds deal and also with Meltzer and some other people at times suggesting that Sheamus was at fault for the injury that would take him out forever, which I think is completely absurd, but whatever. The reality is probably one of Daniel Bryan's three or four best matches in the company was that 2 out of 3 falls match from Extreme Rules with Sheamus. And if you go back and watch that match, Sheamus was the better guy in the match.
I love both those guys. I'm just saying.
I know that you're supposed to like him because he's an indie guy, but I watched it 3 times in the last year, and Sheamus was the better guy in that match. Like, okay, I'm not saying he's better than Daniel Bryan, but in that match, he was the better guy. And, you know, he's good against hosses. He's good against smaller guys like Daniel Bryan. He's good in tag teams. He's just good. If you want to dock him for not being a compelling character, I think that is perfectly fair. I don't have a problem with that. But I don't think he should be written off wholesale when he has as much quality on his resume as he has.
I agree with that. And I'm not saying that Sheamus was that, you know, people should like Daniel Bryan more because he's an indie worker. You know, I'm a fan of both guys. What I'm saying is that I remember that just being like the perfect mesh of two guys working hard. But I'll rewatch that match now because I know it's a quality match, so there's no problem with that. Glenn, Sheamus, are you a Sheamus hater or are you down with Sheamus? What's up?
No, I'm a fan of Sheamus. As long as he's not, you know, saddled with something shitty like the United Nations or whatever.
He was a horrible King of the Ring, man. That little antler crown was killing me.
Yeah, that was not good. I think Sheamus is a victim of some of his pushes coming at weird times. Like when he turned babyface against Mark Henry, that was such a hot angle, and he was such a hot character coming off of even just that first promo where he was the one who came out and said, yeah, I'll challenge you. That was such a great babyface turn for him. He was so hot coming off of that that they decided to put the title on him 6 months later at WrestleMania. You know, it's that sort of mentality that they have sometimes where someone's really hot, we want to put the title on them, we want it to happen at WrestleMania, so let's put them on autopilot for a few months. And
they almost never ever strike when the iron is hot, like ever. Like they don't ever just, man, this guy's hot, let's heat him up even more, boom, let's run. They never run, they always walk. I agree.
Yeah, that's one of the major things that happened to Roman Reigns, where people were begging for him to win the title and they decided, let's do it in 6 months. So Sheamus kind of cooled off a little by the time he won the title. And I wasn't a fan of the angle leading up to WrestleMania that year because most of it was Sheamus pointing at AJ Lee and basically saying, ha ha, you're a girl. And pointing at Daniel Bryan and saying, ha ha, that's a girl. Which was not good television. So he had the misfortune of cooling off before he won the title. And the whole dynamic with Daniel Bryan. I totally agree that, you know, the people still whining about 18 seconds when it made Bryan's career is ridiculous. But otherwise, Sheamus, I agree, has had so many good matches on week-to-week TV. And the team with Cesaro right now, I think, is really great for both of them. So he absolutely has a place on my list.
Yeah, top 40. Okay. Devin, Sheamus, top 40, right?
He'll be somewhere in the middle, just like Cesaro, 40s, 50s, 60s, somewhere. I'll sort that out eventually.
If you drop to 70, we can't be friends anymore.
I pretty much agree with everybody else. Great in-ring worker, awesome TV wrestler. His character hurts him. One other match I'd just like to add and point out as a reference would be the Big Show Hell in a Cell 2012 match, which is fantastic and one of the best matches of the year. That's a match well worth seeking out.
Man, now I got to go watch that match too. Man, hold on. During the break, because we're about to take a break, I'll make sure to write some of these matches down for my homework here. But yeah, I got to check that out too. I'd like to add that I absolutely loved, probably more than any human on earth, the Rusev U.S. title challenge and title change and run there. I was a big fan of that. But I'm a big fan of Rusev. I can't believe we didn't put Rusev on this show. Well, I might have to call an audible or something. I don't know. But I would also like to add that I was at that WrestleMania, the 18-second WrestleMania, and the little kid in front of me was all decked out in his Sheamus gear, and he had his, like, medallion, like his little Celtic cross medallion or whatever. And I was all, yes, yes, yes. And this little kid was like, Sheamus, Sheamus, Sheamus. Like, he was, like, 7 years old. And so, like, when Sheamus beat Daniel Bryan, that little kid turned to me and said, see, I told you Sheamus was better. I was like, shut up, kid. And his mom was in shock that I was going to slap her kid. No, I'm just joking. I wasn't going to slap that kid. But I think what people were more disappointed than anything was that we didn't get a match. That was the thing. Like, me as a wrestling fan, like a huge Sheamus Daniel Bryan fan, right? Like, I'm a fan of these guys. We didn't get the match. It was supposed to be like a contender for like match of the night, and it was for the title. So we figured it would kind of like get that like 15 minutes that Edge Del Rio had gotten previously, and it didn't.
And it was the second year in the row, too, that happened to them.
Bingo. I was just about to say that because I was there at 27, and we were supposed to see that, and I remember talking to Devin and being like, oh, this could be the best match on the show. And then they bumped it to the pre-show or something, and then it didn't happen because of a bad – I was just
– Right. So at least from the perspective of the people I talked to at the time, it wasn't that Sheamus won the title. It wasn't that that Daniel Bryan lost. It was that, and I'm glad you put that you said that, because it reminded us that this was the second year in a row that these guys got shafted for time at Mania. And that was kind of where it really did. I mean, guys, I was there. It killed an entire stadium for at least an hour,
It pains me to say.
Yeah. For an hour and a half, man, until that Undertaker Triple H match, man, that show was dead, So that's all I want to add to that. And make sure you watch that Rusev title change. I love it. Anyway, guys, let's go to break. We're making good time here. And when we come back, we got some other heavy hitters here on the current roster. And so you're listening to the Place to Be Nation.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Hey, pro wrestling announcer Kevin Kelly here. I want to make sure you are all subscribed to all the great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. It's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, which, of course, includes the full archives of the Kevin Kelly Show, the Place to Be Nation pod feed, and the pro wrestling only feed. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And be sure to give Justin your true thoughts. I mean, don't hold back. After all, he is kind of a jerk. Just listen to Scott.
Place Team Nation's JT Rosero and Chad Campbell here. We want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlayStation.com. And we offer those to you on three great feeds. On the Place to Be Nation wrestling feed, we bring you the Mothership, the original Place to Be podcast, as well as Main Event, Lucha Afterground, and our monthly pay-per-view reaction shows, as well as the Our Vantage Point podcast and Jeff Learns Wrestling. In addition to these full-length shows, we also deliver quick-hit pod blasts on topics old and new.
Over on the Pro Wrestling Only feed, we dive deep inside the wrestling business with a stacked army of experts leading the way. The feed features potpourri shows such as This Week in Wrestling, Greetings from Allentown, Psychology is Dead, Puro Potpourri, Stacy and Elliot's Bogus Journey, and the Military Industrial Suplex. We also have shows that focus intently on certain topics like Letters from Center Stage, Space City, an NWA Classics On Demand adventure, Through the Years, Strong Style History, Strong Style Story, and Mount Olympus. Plus, the feed has the full archives of legendary shows like Titans of Wrestling, Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, and much more. And on our popular Place to Be Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, PTBN Dadcast, Go Home in a Box, NBA Team, and Lucha Undead, as well as a veritable podcast heaven for comics fans with the Hard Traveling Fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, Geek and Sassy, and Imaginary Stories podcasts.
You can find all of these current shows plus archives of our past podcasts, including The Kevin Kelly Show, as well by subscribing to all of our feeds on iTunes, and while there, be sure to rate and leave feedback as well. All of these shows, plus others, available on PlacementNation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus in-depth stretch projects and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlacementNation.com/Amazon when shopping online, and download our free PTB Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on our site. We also want to thank our friends at Bonehead's Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, in Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats' Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlacementNation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Okay, welcome back to the Place to Be Nation. I'm Will, and I'm joined by Glenn, Steve, Devin, and Dylan on a super show edition of For Your Consideration. And we're talking about wrestlers that are on the current roster. And this next one, Steve, is a very difficult wrestler for me to place because the last year he has been phenomenal. But the years before that, I couldn't stand him. He actively made me dislike wrestling. And he only had a couple of standout moments in those years for me personally. And that was his Jerry Lawler series, which I'm going to give all credit to Jerry Lawler, and his Cesaro series that we mentioned before the break. And I'm, of course, talking about The Miz. But I cannot deny that he has been by far one of the best characters of the last year. Why did you want to talk about The Miz today?
Well, this guy has been around consistently for 11 years now. It's hard to believe that Mike from the Real World has put together a decade-long WWE career. In the last half of 2010, I thought that he was easily the best character they had. You know, in-ring wasn't always great. Usually passable, but when he won the title, I was certainly behind him cashing in that money in the bank and defeating Randy Orton to become the champion. Should he have gone as far as WrestleMania? Probably not. I know that's often looked down on as one of the less deserving WrestleMania main events of all time and actually turned quite a bit of people away from the product. But he's got some sneaky good stuff. The team with Miz and Morrison started out as nothing and turned into a pretty entertaining tandem. He goes as far back as 2004 with the Tough Enough stuff. 2006, when he came in as kind of the host of the Diva Search, he was so abysmal that just the fact that he has improved into where he is one of the best characters of the last 2 years has been just phenomenal to me. He is one of those guys who anytime they need him to do anything, press, you know, early morning drive time radio interviews, he is the guy they go to. He gets them access that other people maybe wouldn't in some of these mainstream media outlets. I think he is a valuable member of this roster. And like you said, over the last year in particular, he has been one of the best, most compelling characters on their television. He is definitely making my list. And I believe Will is on that button again.
I was on that stupid mute button again, man. It happens. Hey, if that ever happens, just so you know, the next guy can follow up. And in this case, we're going to be talking to Dylan. Dylan, make a case for The Miz here, outside of the last year, because, man, it was rough watching that guy before, you know, this current run.
Well, I'm gonna crib a Devin talking point from us briefly discussing him the other day, even though Devin's sitting right next to me.
Because he made the point, which I think is fair, that, you know, CM Punk wrestled Jerry Lawler in a cage match that got zero heat and nobody bought a damn thing about it. So I don't think it's fair to just say that was all Jerry Lawler. The reality is I don't think any heel in the company at that point could have had that feud and have it be as effective with Lawler as The Miz. I just don't. In fact, I don't even think there's an argument for anybody else, at least as they were currently positioned at that time. I think Miz is a guy who, I think he's a sneaky, good tag team wrestler. I actually really like the Morrison team. I also thought the Big Show stuff was good. I liked the initial deal with R-Truth, you know, with the attack in the cage and all that stuff. I thought the initial angle, the like shock value of that angle was very, very effective. I think Miz actually, you know, is the only guy that made The Rock look like a good wrestler after The Rock came back. You know, if you go back and look at that tag match they had, in that tag match, a lot of people thought, man, The Rock still got it. And then you got to WrestleMania and you realized it was just all finisher spamming and that he had the cardio of 1989 Rufus Jones and it was kind of out the window. So I think he's a sneaky, good utility player type guy. He has value all over the cards. When they do position him in the main events, regardless of, you know, fan backlash, I mean, the reason WrestleMania 27 was a problem wasn't innately because of The Miz. It was because everything was about Rock and Cena. Like, he was a literal triviality in the storytelling. That's not his fault. I don't think it has anything to do with Miz being an undeserving champion that match didn't work. I think it had to do with the fact that they just booked him as a guy who had struggled beating a 60-year-old man, and all the emphasis was on The Rock. You know, I mean, that's just the way it was done. Realistically, I think he's got a solid resume of good matches. I think he's the only guy in the company over the last decade who, when positioned as a heel, has been a consistent real heel who's not been pandering to the fans and not been trying to find a way to get himself over with the increasingly large segment of the fan population that's, you know, sort of a hybrid of hardcore fandom or influenced by what happens in other hip promotions that aren't the WWE. So, you know, Miz will make my list. I don't think that he'll be terribly high because I do think that his lows are very low, but, you know, a guy like that will always have a spot on my list just because I feel like it's clear to me that he adds value to the product as a whole if you look at the long haul of his career. I don't think he's a net negative.
Yeah. I will just say this. That should have been CM Punk's slot at that Mania. I was at the SmackDown taping where Punk smashed Cena over the head with the chair when he kind of, like, remember he was doing commentary for those few weeks? And then he turned on Cena.
Yep.
And that was the perfect time to push that Punk angle forward. And so I was there. And as far as I remember, I don't really want to get a Punk Lawler situation, but you went down my rabbit hole, right? at the time, CM Punk had just turned heel. Remember when he was picking on Lawler? And, sure. and it was an absolute horrible time because nobody wanted to boo the guy. I don't blame Punk or Lawler for that. Plus, Lawler was like, what, 3 days away from a heart attack, you know? So I don't blame either guy for that. That was like one of those, you know, bad booking decisions. And to be fair, I don't blame Miz for like bad booking either, you know? So having said that, I just wanted to throw that out there. But that's neither here nor there. I'm getting off track. Let's go to Glenn. What do you got, Glenn, The Miz?
I'm a big fan of The Miz. I'm a big fan of The Miz whenever he has something to crow about. I think in the mid-late 2000s, he was very good with the U.S. title. I thought he was very good with Money in the Bank. Whenever he has something to kind of puff him up and to boast about, the tag teams, I think, were very, very good. Love Mazorison, love Show Miz. Liked the Miz Truth team, although it was short-lived and kind of cooled off R-Truth, but we'll get there. Miz is the only person who got a decent match out of old-ass Bret Hart when he returned, when they had their U.S. title match. I'm still kind of sad that he and Cena never had a proper one-on-one pay-per-view match. it was always, they had the I Quit match, they had the triple cage match. WrestleMania was supposed to be their chance to do that, but it turned into a bunch of bullshit with The Rock. So that, I think, is a little sad. And of course, the last year and a half or so, you know, everybody suddenly realizes he's good now. The classic matches might not be there, so that hurts him a little bit and probably pushes him to the back half of the list, but I think he's absolutely on my list.
Okay, and finally, Devin.
He's on my back half of my list. I think he's one of the better promos of the last 10 or 15 years in WWE. He gets real heel heat. And one more thing I want to bring up, because I pretty much agree with everybody else, is he's elevated undercarders who otherwise, when they're not around him, fail miserably. Whether you can blame some of the booking or whatnot, but Alex Riley, when he broke up from The Miz in the summer of 2011, Alex Riley was getting big reactions. And that's because The Miz is a great heel who knows how to keep heat on him. And when Alex Riley went on his own, no one gave a shit about him. With Damian Sandow and the Mizdow stuff, Miz got Damian Sandow over in that tag team when he got split from the Miz. Part of that was booking, but no one gave a shit about him after that. And Dolph Ziggler, who always had solid reactions for years. People stopped caring about him because he's Dolph Ziggler and he sucks. But
easy there. We're gonna talk to him. We'll talk about him next, man.
That feud that he and Ziggler had in the fall got people behind Dolph Ziggler, and people were in that match at No Mercy, the career versus title match, had tons of heat because The Miz carried that feud with promos. And The Miz elevates guys who otherwise aren't over, and that's a huge plus for him, in my opinion.
Okay, well, shit. Yeah, I don't know, man. I got to see how Miz does this last 6 months, because a lot of the stuff y'all were mentioning prior to this past year, just not a fan of. Having said all that, it made some compelling cases. Let's go to a guy that we just mentioned. Dylan, I'm just going to take a guess and say that this next guy could have easily been on our Wrestlers We Hate show. And so I'm going to let you talk about Dolph Ziggler.
Yeah, I think the reason I wanted to talk about him is that I think he's sort of, in some ways, I think he's one of the more polarizing wrestlers of the last 15 years or so in the WWE, if not the world, honestly, where... And he's also a guy where I feel like people have gone back and forth, even within themselves, about whether or not they think he's any good or not. Like, at times, he has been the hot ticket among hardcore fans. At other times, there's been a tremendous backlash, and he's become almost a loathsome character, and like a symbol of what people don't want to see anymore. And I think even, he's such a difficult guy to even really put a finger on, because in some ways he's sort of the heir to the working style of somebody like a Mr. Perfect, right? Like, he's a crazy over the top bumper, lots of very flashy body language, heavy sort of delivery of offense. He does do some cool things in the ring. He's obviously a freakishly good athlete. I don't think that that's even in dispute. But he just doesn't. He just feels like a guy who has been around for a long time and has no real utility to the company anymore. And in a sense, it's sad. If you went back and looked, I'd be willing to bet that Dolph Ziggler has an awful lot of good matches. Like, I would say that he probably has more good matches than anybody else, that I'm positive I won't include. Do you know what I mean? Like, he's like, in terms of volume of good matches, he actually probably stacks up well with a lot of people who I will include. but he's just such a soulless and depthless character. He has, like, there's nothing intriguing about him whatsoever. At times, it feels like they're going to turn a corner with him, and maybe he's starting to resonate, and maybe that will affect the way he wrestles, and it'll be more dynamic and more exciting. Like, for example, when they actually gave him the big deal at Survivor Series when Sting debuted and everything, I guess it was 2 years ago or whatever, or the Miz feud last year that Devin just alluded to a few minutes ago, like, it seemed like maybe Ziggler's going to be, you know, a guy again. But the reality is, he just doesn't have it. There's not any there, for lack of a better way of putting it. He's a super athlete, and I think for a certain type of fan, those are the guys who you're supposed to like. We must push him because he's a super athlete. We must push him because he believes the great matches are all about collecting near falls. Like, there's a mentality among a certain section of hardcore fandom that's like what you're supposed to be into, and that sort of determines whether or not a guy should get to the next level. But when you really break it down with Ziggler, it's just a guy that's completely devoid of that element that makes you want to watch someone, right? Like, he just doesn't have it. And I say that as somebody who can fully acknowledge that this is a guy who's had good series with people like Kofi Kingston, who I'm not a fan of, and he's had at times great matches. Granted, it's against people like Rey Mysterio, who has great matches with everybody. But the point is, he's been able to deliver, you know, but he just doesn't have anything that lasts. He's a completely disposable wrestler. I would argue, like, if there was a MVP award, I would argue that he's the LVP. He's the least valuable player in the company.
Shit.
We're not going to let you say anything else after that, but that's a great line. Anyway, Glenn, do you agree with Dylan, or are you a Ziggler fan?
Oh, man, can I just sing back up to that? Yeah. I totally agree. I hate Ziggler. I have never seen in him what so many other people seem to have seen in him. I have found him drastically overrated for basically ever. I think the best part of his career to me was the few weeks that he spent jobbing to the Funkasaurus. The vision of Ziggler, like, running up to him and, like, falling against him like he hit a telephone pole, and then the Funkasaurus standing over him and jiggling, is the definitive vision of Dolph Ziggler for me. No shot on any list, please.
Devin, you're the one who started the Ziggler hate rolling, man. Continue.
No, he's awful. I mean, the Shawn Michaels cosplay is sad. It's terrible. He sucks.
Wow, Shawn Michaels cosplay.
He's so bad. Shawn Michaels even called him out on it one time, I believe. I mean, he sucks. I mean, yeah, he has good matches, but his character is the worst character, like, ever. He's just like, I mean, he's the least likable person ever as a character. I want to punch him in the face every time he comes on my TV. God. No way. No shot.
Yeah, you sound like me with Triple H and Kane, yes, on that Worst of the Worst show. Steve, are you going to give Dolph Ziggler some love here, man? He's getting bashed over the head by these guys.
I'm going to assume that Dolph Ziggler owes each and every one of you money for various reasons. This guy, he's not great. He is just a prototype for me for somebody who would be very well served just to disappear for a year or two and come back fresh. I don't think he's as bad as this group is making him out to be, but he's just played out at this point. He needs to go away so we can miss him. If you're willing to miss him at this point, I think it says a lot, though, that, you know, this guy can't overcome bad booking. I thought he was good last year with The Miz, but as soon as they split off, Ziggler meant nothing and The Miz was still shining. You have some people like Antonio Cesaro who can be in badly booked situations and we still want to see him, but when Dolph is not being booked well, I mean, we certainly don't miss him at all. He might make my list, but if he does, he won't be high. He'd be a bottom 25 kind of guy.
That's fair. Okay, well, man, we got out of that Ziggler hate. Whoa, man. All right, let's move on to the next guy, in Glenn. And you chose this one, and this is R-Truth. Or as Steve was so nice to point out during the break, our main man, K-Quick. So talk Get about R-Truth. And why? Well, I was shocked you picked R-Truth. I really wasn't expecting that to happen. So what's your case for R-Truth?
R-Truth's heel run in 2011 is so close to my heart because for months he was the reason to watch Raw every week. And he was a good reason to watch Raw every week. His promos during that time about getting okey-doked by Little Jimmy were, like, amazing compared to anything he had done that I had seen in the company before. It came out of nowhere. And suddenly he was making promos about hot dog buns and spiders in ladders, just, like, utterly compelling. And some of the people he was playing off of, like, the heel turn against John Morrison was one of the more interesting things that John Morrison did that year. And when he had the promo after the Tough Enough finale with Steve Austin and Vince McMahon, and suddenly R-Truth came down in a Civil War uniform babbling about whatever. He could babble about anything and make it, like, compelling and excellent. Where he falls down is the rest of his career and a lot of the matches. During that great run in 2011, he had a match with Rey Mysterio at Over the Limit and John Cena at Capital Punishment. And for two of the best wrestlers of the last 15 years, he had pedestrian matches with both of them, which hurts him. So I don't think he can honestly make a list, maybe at like number 98, just because of that little bit that I really loved. But I think he's an interesting case to look at as someone with a very small sliver of very high quality.
Yeah, I still have Haiti Kid over R-Truth, just throwing that out there. So anyway, what about you, Devin? R-Truth, any shot?
No shot, but I do love the 2011 heel character, like Glenn does, but he Truth barely has any good matches, let alone great ones. So
okay, so not much to say about R-Truth. Steve? Yeah.
Probably not making my list. My favorite R-Truth moment was when the guys in that year's Money in the Bank match were promoing each other. And then R-Truth comes out to talk about how he's going to win Money in the Bank, and they have to stop to remind him he's not even in the match. And he just does this goofy, oh, seriously? My bad. And just goes on about his business like it never happened. That, and then the Rumble match where he runs in with a ladder to try to climb to get a briefcase in the middle of a Royal Rumble was pretty damn great. He's entertaining, but not making my list.
Dylan, making your list? Come on. You have some hot takes.
I will say that my two favorite things about R-Truth were when R-Truth, the aforementioned R-Truth and Miz Invasion of the Cage bit that they did in the road to the Rock Cena match a few years back, tag team match. JR's call of, by God, they've got bolt cutters is one of my all-time favorite calls in wrestling history for its absurdity. And also, I want to note that a real highlight of my younger years was listening to a young Devin and Dustin badly rap the old K Quick theme. So, but other than that, there's not much there. I'm not my favorite Ron Killings is actually in Wildside, which is a long time ago. So he will not make my list.
Okay, well, let's move on. Yeah, R-Truth not making my list. I mean, if Little Tokyo and Haiti Kid weren't kind of like my gatekeepers, he might have snuck on, but it's not going to happen. Let's move on to our next guy, and that's Luke Harper. I'm having a hard one with Luke Harper too, Devin, because not he's going to make my list because of some of his amazing work. But, man, being saddled with like Bray Wyatt, it just hurts, man. I do not like me any Bray Wyatt. So make a case here for Luke Harper.
Yeah, I think his case is mostly pretty much 95% in ring work. I actually think when he gets the chance to cut a promo or show some character, he's actually pretty good. He's not great, but he's solid. But like you said, he is drowned out by Bray Wyatt's garbage and drivel. But as a worker, he's fantastic. He, in 2014, I think was probably his best year. He was amazing in trios matches, and those classic matches are with the Shield, which does help because he does have one classic feud and series with the Shield, and he was, you know, arguably one of the best guys in the matches, maybe not if the best guy in the matches. He was fantastic in the tag series with the Usos over the summer, and all those matches are great. And when he became a singles worker late that year and had that great ladder match with Dolph Ziggler, and he was IC champ and stuff, and was having good matches on TV as a singles worker. He was great in all three phases, singles, tag, and trios that year, and he was one of the better wrestlers in the world that year. He's also been marred by injuries a little bit and just kind of irrelevancy. Once they broke up the Wyatts, they just decided that they weren't going to use the poor guy, and he's been floundering on SmackDown for months now, and it's frustrating because he's such a really good wrestler. He's got all the tools to be kind of like a Cesaro or Sheamus as far as a TV worker, but he's not been on TV much lately, and that's a shame, and that does hurt him because they don't use him as much. He has a shot to make my list in the bottom 10 or 15 or so. I really want him to make my list, and I want to make room for him, but he's hurt by, like you said, being swallowed up by Bray Wyatt's crap and injuries and just not being used really at all at times, because even in 2014, all three Wyatts went on a 2 or 3 months hiatus. They weren't even on TV for 3 months. So they've done that to them 2 or 3 times, and that hurts him.
Yeah, I agree. What's your take on him, Steve? Because like for me, I agree with Devin that on work alone, he'll probably make my list.
Yeah, he's just underrated worker, very good. I was at the SmackDown taping where Jinder Mahal became the number one contender, and Luke Harper was in that match, and we were convinced that it was going to be the launching point for Luke Harper because they just split the Wyatts, Bray had just gone to Raw, and it seemed like the prime time to strap the rocket to Harper, and it just did not happen. Over the last year, I think he's done a amazing job at getting himself in shape. It doesn't always show because he looks like the fittest mechanic at Valvoline with his attire. So, something that hurts him is just like you said, he had been showcased inconsistently. This guy's been, through no fault of his own, unable to put together even a solid 6 months of standout, consistent performances. He's probably not making my list, but he's somebody I need to look into more.
Man, you and I are going to have some words, man. Triple H at 25, no Luke Harper. You're killing me, man.
Every time you complain about one of my rankings, Triple H moves up a spot. He's up to number 19 now.
Man, it's absolutely pathetic. It's hurting my heart. Anyway, okay, Dylan, speak some sense here.
I mean, Harper is not going to make my list, but it's for reasons that are kind of unfortunate. It's for the injuries. It's for the fact that he's not treated relevantly, even to the extent of giving him a nice C-show run, really. Like, that is the only reason. I mean, I think it's a real indictment, probably the single biggest indictment I can think of the WWE over the last few years from a booking perspective, is the fact that if you look at those tremendous Wyatt and Shield tags, which are among the best matches the company's had in the last decade, the only person from the six people in those matches who will make my list is Roman Reigns. And Luke Harper's probably the only other guy who even has an outside shot, and he really doesn't have much one. A great talent, I agree with everything Devin said, but there's just not enough there, and it's largely because of a bad combination of injuries and, you know, no common sense from the WWE in being able to utilize an obviously incredible talent.
Okay, what do you say, Glenn?
He's on the bubble for me. It seemed for a while like his fate was to have better matches with Bray Wyatt's opponents on TV than Wyatt would go on to have with them on pay-per-view, which he did in every feud that Wyatt had for a while. He did it with Cena, he did it with Jericho, he did it with Reigns. and it seemed like that would go on for as long as they kept them together, and it pretty much did. It's sad that they haven't done anything with him. I mean, the ideal thing, I think, to do with him would have been, like, a year or two ago, to just make Wyatt his manager and just push him. I think that would use both of them in their better roles. He's definitely on the bubble, because he doesn't have the resume. He doesn't have the, connection. It's too spotty.
Yeah, for me, he falls in the category of guys I want to watch, and I'm always going to put a premium on guys I actually am invested in. And so emotionally, he has to make my list, because he's one of the few guys that when I turn the TV on, I'm actively looking forward to watch if he ever shows up. So let's move on to a guy who has no problem making my list. I have him in my top 20. I am in love with this guy. It's a man crush. I don't give a shit what anyone says. Actually, I have him one spot against Hulk Hogan because of Hulk Hogan's racist comments, and that is Mark Henry. And so, Steve, you chose Mark Henry, so I'm only going to assume that he is above Triple H on your list.
He is making my list. He will be in a prominent position on my list based solely on how fantastic his 2011 was. The fact that he was able to win me over, I did not give a shit about Mark Henry for so long. And then he turns around and does the most compelling, realistic character possible in 2011. At one point, he had somebody down. I can't remember if it was Kane or the Big Show. And referees are tending to him. And he's yelling at the referees to leave him alone, let him suffer like I suffered after coming back from that injury. And it was just fantastic stuff. I actually shouted with glee when he beat Randy Orton for the world title that fall. This guy is just phenomenal character work that year. Unfortunately, you know, there's a lot of time before that where he was either not good or out for extended time with injuries. There's just various things. You know, they gave him gimmicks so bad that they were meant to get him to quit his contract. He's one of those types who's able to overcome all that. And then even after 2011, he had the big retirement tease with John Cena, which actually popped a pay-per-view buy rate. This guy can draw money when given the chance. He's probably going to be a 40 to 60 range on my list.
Okay, I don't hate you that much if he's in your 40 to 60 range. Yeah, I have him at like number, I don't know, something insanely high. Like, what do I have him at? Oh, yeah, I have him at number 13, right behind Ricky Steamboat. So that tells you how much I love Mark Henry.
Jesus.
Holy crap.
What? What?
Oh,
Hold on. Dylan, why is that such an outrageous number?
Well, I don't know that it is. I mean, here's the thing about Mark Henry. Mark Henry is the... I have traveled all over the country to see wrestling over the last few years. But the only time I've ever traveled to see a WWE show that was not NXT or a pay-per-view, but rather a house show, was when I came to Chattanooga in 2011 to see him wrestle in a cage match toward the end of the Hall of Pain run. I mean, I was willing to travel, you know, I mean, obviously I was visiting family too, but I coordinated that trip so that I could come 6.5 hours to see Mark Henry wrestle. I think the Hall of Pain run is amazing. I think it's easy for us to forget that it was also a business success. I mean, if you're the type of person that matters to you, it's worth noting that SmackDown was on its complete ass right before that. And, you know, whether you want to credit that to them sort of mixing the brands back together again, which a lot of people do, or other things, the reality is there's no question that the turnaround occurred right around the time. If you go back and watch the ratings and the house show attendance, that turnaround occurred right around the time they put the belt on Mark Henry. And they heated him up as a heel. He had great matches with everybody during that run. His promos were amazing. I think he's actually one of the most underrated promos in wrestling history. Like truly an all-timer as a promo in an era where very few guys are even good, let alone great. A truly great big man who knows how to use his size in a time when so many big men just want to prove that they're, you know, capable of doing athletic spots like other guys. Henry knew how to use his, you know, weight and also deliver with the athletic spots when need be. If you want, like, Henry is the only guy I ever saw, like, over the last few years of Edge's run who made Edge's spear look like a legitimate finish. I want to say it was a Money in the Bank match. If you go back, Mark Henry takes takes a spear on the floor from Edge that makes it look like the most murderous thing in wrestling. And this is like a 400-pound dude who has no business selling for Edge at all, frankly. But it was his job, and he did it and delivered. I think he's probably the greatest gatekeeper in the history of pro wrestling. This is a guy where you can take him and destroy him with losses on TV, in theory, to guys that don't matter, and he still has credibility with the fans. When that music hits, people just react. They react. They know he's a badass. They see him as a badass. They are invested in him, even if they don't, like, realize that they're almost invested in him. There's an intrinsic credibility to what he does. When they needed to build back Brock Lesnar, they have Brock Lesnar come out and F5 Mark Henry on the floor. Why? Because Mark Henry is a guy that people recognize as a badass, even if he's off TV for months. When they need a guy to come in and clear weight room in the Royal Rumble to get a cheap pop, who do they go to? Mark Henry. When they need to develop a new star and they need to give a credible win, who do they go to? Mark Henry. And that's ignoring the fact that he had tremendous runs as a monster heel before 2011, because he had a great one in 2006 on SmackDown, which people almost never talk about.
It's amazing.
And a tremendous one in 2008 on ECW, which people almost never talk about. He had three separate distinct runs as a top heel in that monster role where he was excellent, and three completely different eras for the promotion, and really effectively in three different brands for the promotion, because 2006 SmackDown was a lot different from 2011 SmackDown. And then you sprinkle in the other good work that he did, of course, across the years. I don't know if I have him that high, but he'll be awfully high on my list.
Yeah, no, he. I don't know, man. I'll explain my rating after I hear everyone else's thoughts. Glenn?
I love Mark Henry. He's probably going to be in like the second.
I love you, Glenn. I love you.
He's probably going to be in like the second quarter of the list for me, but
above Triple H, right?
I haven't put a list together, but probably. the Hall of Pain run, just everything about it was great. My favorite bit of the match with Orton was when Orton finally knocked him off his feet. He was like laying on the mat against the ropes, still beating up Randy Orton from the mat. That was just amazing, and an amazing way of putting him over as someone who just could not be stopped. The ECW stuff and the SmackDown stuff earlier, I see from our vantage point now as kind of building up to that character, because I don't think either of those runs was as good, but he really put it all together. Another moment that I just love from his career was when he was brought over to Raw in 2009. There was a gauntlet match that Randy Orton was in, and they, you know, debuted a bunch of people who were coming over in the draft, and like Jack Swagger came out and like took the count out because of heel solidarity, and then Mark Henry came out and Orton was like begging him to just go and take the count out, also out of heel solidarity, and Henry just wagged one finger, and immediately he was like an awesomely over babyface. Just for wagging one finger and then beating up Randy Orton for a while. That was a great moment. His face run after that kind of floundered. He had a team with MVP for a while that wasn't very good. He has these fallow periods a lot. And that's something that might count against him a little, such as the Attitude Era. You know me, fuck the Attitude Era.
I'm with you.
Thank you. And some of his face run on Raw, some of the run on SmackDown after the big monster period there. But when he's good, he is so, so good. I can't not have him fairly high.
Yeah, I'm going to listen to Devin talk, and then I'm going to say, I was about to jump in with my take. I was like, oh shit, Devin's here. Got to talk to Devin.
Yeah, he'll be in my top 40 probably. He's awesome. I pretty much agree with everybody else. That's a good call, Glenn, because of the Raw where he turned babyface, because I remember that very well. And I was marking out big time when that happened. But yeah, he's awesome. And I also want to mention that my favorite thing that Goldberg ever did in his first WWE run was when Mark Henry tried to cash in on Triple H's bad Harley Race cosplay from 1983 when he did the put the bounty on Goldberg's head, and Mark Henry and Goldberg had a fun little TV match on Raw from 2003. So that's, yeah, he's top 40, maybe even top 30.
So I throw out this crazy, outrageous rating. All of y'all were in shock. I thought there were a couple of heart attacks for a minute. But here's the reality. Okay, because I went back and revisited some of those runs. Like, I'd heard about the 2003 Goldberg stuff. But then I started going down this rabbit hole of Mark Henry matches, okay? Like, Mark Henry was surprisingly effectively good even during the Attitude Era run. Problem is, nobody got a chance to shine match-wise in that era, especially on TV, because it was all Vince Russo schmoz bullshit. But like, when you look at people like him, Goldust, they knew what they were doing. Like, Mark Henry has always been like that mountain. Can you knock the tree down type of guy, you know? And he's always been great at it. So then I go into the 2003 stuff. The Goldberg stuff was fun. My buddy Phil Schneider likes to point to a pay-per-view match with Viscera, which is not a good match. I did not think the match was good at all. However, Mark Henry, maybe one of the most insane bumpers of all time, just taking nasty bumps and just getting thrown into the stairs at like 400 pounds and just really kind of displaying that. And we're going to get to an even bigger bump in a couple of seconds here. But then I watched the Undertaker casket match. And I remember people shitting on that match, the one from WrestleMania. Which WrestleMania was that?
22.
And Glenn, it might have been you who said, man, I remember not liking that match. I need to go rewatch it. Go rewatch it. That was a legitimately good match. And maybe my favorite casket match of all time. I mean, I know that's low-hanging fruit. But I thought Henry and Taker looked great in that match. It shocked me. I was like, man, I'd never even bothered watching this match because of the negative reviews, and I'm glad I saw it. Then I watched a Booker T series where it was two television matches and a pay-per-view match, and I thought they had a great little run of matches on TV. Pay-per-view match was decent, but the TV matches were good, and I remember enjoying the stuff with Ray on SmackDown back in 2006, and then once you get to the Hall of Pain, it's over. It's over. Amazing promo, right? Just this angry man who's going to destroy people and enjoy it. You get to the big retirement speech with Cena, which was amazing. Everybody was captivated. Pulling out great matches with Randy Orton. And I say pulling out, right? Because I'm kind of biased against Randy Orton. But before that, I always thought, man, if this guy can just stay healthy, if he can just, you know, put together that sustained run, you know, who's going to forget that Hall of Pain era? Nobody, right? I mean, the great matches with Daniel Bryan, The Big Show, Sheamus, Orton, just boom, boom, boom. Cena, when he had the Cena match at Money in the Bank. So now you're adding great matches on top of a great character with an iconic all-time run during the Hall of Pain era. Like, and that was during the Summer of Punk and all of that. So Mark Henry was able to make his mark when CM Punk was making his biggest mark. I have to give him credit for that. And when I look at names above and below, who else am I emotionally invested in as much as Mark Henry? You know, if it wasn't for the injuries and continuously like having those stop-start pushes, I probably would have him top 10. Because I think he's that good at his character, and I think he's that good in the ring. I'm going to end with this real quick. Then we're going to jump to the guy I'm going to talk about now. And I was there for the Mark Henry Big Show pay-per-view match. I want to say it was Vengeance. Was it Vengeance? Was that the one where the ring broke? Yep. I was there for that live. When that match started, you know, they were kind of trying to do this like mat thing. And, you know, people were going boring and people were grumbling. And I'm like, Mark Henry, Hall of Fame. You know, and I'm just like acting like an idiot because I'm such a Henry Mark. And I was not a Big Show Mark at the time, but I slowly became one. By the end of that match, I would say even not even by the end, just a few minutes into that match, you started to see that these guys were winning over the crowd. There was that like groundswell of support for this match going and going and going. And then they started dropping each other with these insane bumps and the crowd just like hit this fever pitch. It was like, and you rarely see that like in live match. Sometimes you're so caught up in it that you don't really notice what's going on around you, you know, or like we've all been to WrestleManias where sometimes the crowd and the energy kind of gets drowned out because of the venue or whatever, or because it's a shitty match. This was a rare case where you just felt that match growing and growing and growing. And then when they're trading the big, crazy top rope spots at the end, the crowd is going batshit crazy. I had never seen a crowd go from so disinterested to so electrified in the span of like 15 minutes. I mean, we've seen matches that start out hot, then go cold, or start out hot, stay hot. I've never seen a match grow like that live before. It was like one of the most amazing live experiences that I've ever been a part of, just to see the shift in the crowd reaction during the match, you know, before they broke the ring. And so props to both guys. And I cannot get that out of my head when I'm ranking Mark Henry. I cannot get that Hall of Pain run out of my head. I cannot get that great promo where he retired out of my head. And then the follow-up with Cena, that was a great match of the year candidate. I can't get that stuff out of my head. And so for that reason, I'm going to have him high. Because when, you know, I have people like Phil Schneider or, you know, in the past, maybe Dylan would say, watch this match. If they told me, hey, man, you know, watch this TNA match, you know, Kurt Angle and Samoa Joe had a really good match, I'd be like, it's TNA. I'm not going to, you know. If you say someone like, hey, watch this match, it's Goldust versus, you know, I don't know, name of Randy Orton, or it's Mark Henry versus The Miz. Well, now you've piqued my interest. Even though I don't like Randy Orton, I don't like The Miz. The minute you say a key name like that, Goldust, Mark Henry, Daniel Bryan, Rey Mysterio, Eddie Guerrero, I'm so emotionally invested in these guys, I'm instantly going to watch that match. I'm going to write it down on my to-do list, and I'm going to do it because I have that connection with him. And so that's why I have him so high. And I'll maintain all of his runs were good. If not for injuries, he'd be in my top 10. Had no problem putting him that high. Having said all that, let's talk about the other guy in that amazing match I saw live, and that's the Big Show. And so, Dylan, you picked the Big Show. And now this guy, man, I mean, he has almost as long of a run as Kane. But yet where Kane, we talked about it on the Hate Show, no shot, one of the most disappointing performers of all time. Big Show almost exceeds expectations for what he's been doing. So why don't you talk about the Big Show?
Yeah, Big Show is, in a sense, he's kind of an unfortunate, a sad figure in the sense that if he had been in a situation where he was booked with any sort of competency, he feels like he's somebody who should be a number one contender, honestly. Like, I don't think the WWE ever really had a clue what they had with him. You have a big dude who's very good at communicating as both a babyface and a heel, who's very likable when he's a good guy and very hateable when he's a bad guy, and can work, and they had absolutely no clue how to present him. I mean, to me, the real crime with the Big Show is that he's not a top 10 contender, right? Like, he's a guy that will easily make my list because if you run down his career in the WWF, or WWE rather, it's just a string of at minimum quality performances and often good performances, even in situations where things easily could have gone badly. Like, for example, throwing him in tag teams with people like The Miz or Chris Jericho, in theory, that
feels like it could be a waste of a guy with his size and his skill set. I actually think those tag teams were both very good. I think they largely delivered in their roles. The Undertaker feud that he had, was that 2010 maybe? I don't remember exactly when it was. Maybe 2011, was actually one of the more fun Undertaker feuds that they actually worked in to a TV feud and not just like the build to the big matches of any Undertaker feud that I can remember. I love the way it was done. I love the way they set things up. I thought he was a sneaky good opponent for John Cena, even though he never really gets thought of as being a good opponent for John Cena. When he was in the ring with another Haas, like a Mark Henry, I think his matches were very good, if not better. He's another guy that had multiple finishers that he sort of developed over the years, from the punch to the choke slam to the fall down elbow drop where he's got the guy held up. I don't even know what you call that move. Like he had a lot of different tools at his disposal. And for a guy that size, I think the willingness to be that creative gets extra points for me. Like Mark Henry, a tremendous bumper for his size. I don't think he's quite as good a bumper as Mark Henry, because I tend to agree with Will that Mark Henry's an all-timer. But when you factor in the size of the Big Show, I mean, that's bonus points, because a guy that big has no business taking some of the bumps he's taken over the years. I think his feud and the sprints with Brock are actually from Brock's first run are actually really fun, like burst of energy type matches. And I'm actually upset that they never paid off into something bigger, because I think there was like a long-term story that could have been told there, even when Brock returned. They did do, I guess, that squash match, but I mean something more than that. What hurts him is that the WWE really never really knew what they had with the guy. I mean, other than the Floyd Mayweather match at WrestleMania, which was a tremendous performance by the Big Show, like an all-time great performance in my view, I don't think they ever really knew what they had with him. I think, you know, he debuted in that big impactful way. Was it at the St. Valentine's Day Massacre where he debuted, I believe? And, yes. You know, and that was kind of an impactful debut, but it was all like almost immediately after that, they had no clue what they had in the guy. And I don't think they ever really completely figured it out. And it's a real shame, because in terms of good matches, he's got a pretty lengthy resume. And he was a guy who can carry a promo. He's not an all-time great promo, but he's, I would say, good and certainly above the mean for this era. And yet they never really gave him or put him in a position to have that blow-away run on top. And that's the only thing to me that keeps him from being an upper-tier candidate.
No, you made some good points. I agree with you. I got him in my top half. You know, not as high as Mark Henry, because I think Mark Henry's highs are higher. But, man, you're right about that Floyd Mayweather match. That was amazing. What do you say, Glenn?
He's definitely on my list as well, probably in the back half, because between his highs, his lows get pretty low at times. God, what was it where, like, Eddie Guerrero was spraying, like, sewage on him or something? Or, oh, no, it was when he gave him, like, diuretics or something, and then the rest of the episode of SmackDown was all about, ha, 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 the Big Show is in the bathroom. You know, there's that sort of, like, just, like, bad, bad use that kind of mars his career. I think he's usually at his best in tag teams and multi-man matches. A lot of his high-profile singles matches didn't really sit well with me. Like, that feud with Undertaker, I was at the Survivor Series when they had their casket match, and that was just terrible. God, that was bad. I never really liked his matches with John Cena. I don't think they had, you know, the necessary chemistry, really. So he does kind of suffer for some of that stuff, but he's definitely on the list for his better runs, for the tag runs. I like in 2011, 2012, around that time when he started emoting more. I always called it like Big Show's Big Emotions. You know, that was really fun sort of character stuff that fed into it a little bit. The feud with Mark Henry in 2011 was great. The three-way feud they had with Daniel Bryan after Bryan cashed in was great. So that pumps him up a little bit, but not into the top half for me.
Okay. And now we'll go to you, Devin.
Yeah, Big Show will make my list, probably in the bottom half. I think he is hurt in some ways by just unbelievably bad booking, and that hurts him to a degree. And I also think he was somewhat lousy in the ring, and especially in the early 2000s when he was out of shape. But he has tons of highs. That Floyd Mayweather match is like the best celebrity wrestling match ever. It's amazing. And he's also has cool little moments. Like he's always great with celebrities. The Shaq stuff with, on that Raw in 09 was awesome. He's really good with celebrities and stuff like that. And yeah, like I mentioned earlier, that really great Sheamus match from Hell in a Cell 2012. He had an awesome match with Roman Reigns at Extreme Rules 2015, the last man standing match. He had maybe Del Rio's best match in WWE at the beginning of 2013 in another last man standing match. So he's got a lot of high quality stuff, and he'll definitely get on my back half.
All right, so now we're gonna go to my arch nemesis, my buddy Steve. Is he above Mark Henry on your list or right below him?
He is in the same range. I'd said Big Show, or Mark Henry is probably 40 to 60. I would say Big Show's probably going to be in the top 50, probably between 40 and 50. He is had a long run. I think the first 3.5 years of that run are just nothing. A lot of it was him being out of shape and not putting in good performances. Once he moved to SmackDown near the end of 2002 and had Paul Heyman working with him directly and giving him a lot of coaching, I think he improved quite a bit. He held his own with the matches with Brock Lesnar and Kurt Angle in the summer of 2003. I think the 2006 ECW Championship run is better than it had any right to be. He put in a lot of decent matches, and he was a guy at that time was just monstrously out of shape and was still working like a giant and able to put in some good performances. I agree that the Floyd Mayweather match is vastly underrated. Very good match. He's been around a long time, and when called on to do good things, he does well in the spot, but there is just a lot of dead space there where he's either in a lull or just straight out booked terribly.
Yeah, that's fair. I guess. Like, whatever, I love the Big Show, man. I was there live, man. They broke the ring. It's exciting.
Oh, speaking of that, let's not forget the Strowman matches either.
Yeah, those are great.
Yeah, you know, I don't know, man. I like big dudes who just beat the shit out of each other, and I love the, you know, he kind of co-opted that William Regal one punch knockout, which I just love, you know, because of that Mayweather feud. One of the matches I saw live was that four-way tag team elimination match from TLC 2013. And Big Show was magnificent in that match. I think it was him and Ray as a tag team.
Yep.
And loved it. I mean, just seeing that punch live, man, it was like, oh, man, that looks like it connected. Just, and I love a real punch, man. That's why Jerry Lawler is, like, really high on my list. So
let's move on. I will say real quick, as a former fat guy, the fact that 50-year-old Big Show all of a sudden has abs, that is astounding to me. He's giving me a goal to work toward now. Maybe he just bumped up another two spots on my list.
I know. Yeah, man. And dude, you just posted that picture the other day, man, of when you had all that weight, man. Dude, you're right, man. You lost a ton of weight. Just a little sidetrack there. And I'm impressed, man. You're like my hero, Steve. All right.
Well, thanks, man. Let's move on.
Well, whatever, man. I hate that you don't have like Cesaro and Sheamus in your top 20, but whatever. All right. So Kevin Owens, Glenn, this is a guy, man. I don't like watching him wrestle. I really don't. I kind of was excited with that Cena series when he came in, and then I'm not a fan, man. I don't know. Convince me I should be a fan of this guy. Help me out.
Well, he is a guy that I like to watch wrestle. I think all of his matches with Sami Zayn, those two have, like, insane chemistry. Especially, God, which pay-per-view was it last spring where they had their big blow-off match and fought again, like, 2 months later, but whatever.
Payback.
Payback, thank you. That match with Sami Zayn, the ones in NXT were great. The Finn Balor matches in NXT I thought were very good. The Cena series, especially the first one. The Cesaro matches that he had that summer in 2015 as well. And even more recently, the Roman Reigns matches I thought were very good. The one at the Royal Rumble was great. His Ambrose matches for the Intercontinental title were also good. He's a guy that I just like to watch work. I love the way that he integrates his asshole character into his wrestling. I love every time he sets up like a big, like hard-hitting or high-flying, crowd-pleasing spot and then stops and locks on a headlock just to troll people. I love his trolling. I love his yelling at people during matches. That's another thing that I love about Mark Henry. Kevin Owens does it sometimes. I love just the way that he combines the character work and the wrestling, I think, is so compelling. So I think out of the people who have kind of a shorter career, he's only been around a couple of years, but I think he still has to get on my list somewhere. You muted again, Will?
Yes. All right. Oh, Devin, this is you're a newbie at this, man, so it's okay. Okay, but it's your turn, Devin.
Sorry. Okay, man. Owens won't make my list. Here's the thing. I think he's a good spot fest wrestler, but that's not my favorite style of wrestling. As far as his character work goes, funny, ironic heel Kevin Owens doesn't really do it for me because I don't think he's... It gets him cheers instead of boos, and I don't really consider it to be very good heel work. Serious heel Kevin Owens, when like in the Sami Zayn feud when he first came to NXT, or when he first turned on Jericho in the Build to Mania, is very good. Good promo, good character. But when he decides to be, laugh out loud, U.S. Open Challenge, Face of America, laugh out loud, ha ha ha, I find it to be grating and annoying. And I don't think he's that versatile or dynamic in the ring. I think he's a one-trick pony in terms of he seems like a guy who just kind of does spot fest, and if he doesn't do that, he just kind of locks in a headlock and says funny jokes to pop the crowd, I guess. I don't know. He just doesn't do it for me. He won't make my list.
I'm kind of with you there, Devin. I mean, I like a lot of his stuff with Zayn, as Glenn pointed out, and I love the way he debuted against Cena, but to me, it just feels like diminishing returns. But, you know, that's just me. Steve, sure. Are you more on Devin's or Glenn's side of view on this?
I'm leaning closer to Glenn's way of thinking here. I think he's a very intelligent wrestler. One of my favorite spots of the last year was at WrestleMania when he wrestled Jericho. And he literally broke the pin with one finger on the rope. I've been watching wrestling for 27 years. I've never seen anybody break a pin with one finger. And then they revisited that in the rematch with Jericho working over the fingers to make sure that would not happen again. I think he's an overachiever. You know, you look at him and he looks like he has no business being in a WWE ring compared to everyone else. He's not necessarily a giant. He's just kind of a heavy set guy out there doing his thing. And he captivates the audience for the most part. He's probably making my list. The thing that goes against him for me is longevity at this point. He just made it up to the main roster just about 2 years ago as we record this. But he's put in some good matches. The Sami Zayn series definitely is right up there. And the three-match series with Cena in 2005 was very good. I thought the first Cena match at Elimination Chamber 2015 was the second best WWE match of that year. He's probably going to make it in the bottom quarter of my list.
Okay, along with Triple H. I got you, man. It's all okay. Good. Yeah. Now, okay, so Dylan, so right now we're in a tag team match. Me and Devin against Steve and Glenn, okay? And you have to do a run-in, and you're going to attack one of the teams. Where's Kevin Owens falling on you? on your list, man? Or is he even making your list? Because,
well, man. Well, what I'll say to that particular analogy is that, Will, you're an old friend, and Devin is my brother, and while usually I would turn on you guys in this situation, I'm going to side with you. Because while I don't hate Kevin, I can't fault him for, you know, sort of sticking to his guns, because he is an overachiever. He's a guy with that look who's managed to make it as a top star in the WWE, and he made it. By doing what he does, which is go, PWG style wrestling with Def Comedy Jam tribute, bad comedy lines in between. I mean, that's literally how he got there. So it's hard for me to criticize a guy for sticking to what got him to the dance. I think it's smart, and I don't blame him for it. The problem is I just don't want to see it. And so it creates a situation where I think he's right, basically, to be wrestling and doing what he does, but it's wrong for me as a fan. And if he was a guy who was, you know, because we are sort of asked to be objective in this process, or at least try to be, if it was a guy who was like a clearly transcendent next level star, I might put that bias aside and say, okay, I have to include him. The reality is he isn't. You know, I will say that I feel like he has had some very good stuff in the company. I do think he was very good in NXT. If the NXT character was the character that we saw on TV every week, he probably would have a shot. And I'll also throw out the small possibility that if he has like a really tremendous second half of 2017, I might consider sneaking him on the very, very tail end. But at this point,
like right above Haiti Kid or something?
Right above Gilbert. But at this point, I just don't think that there's enough of what I look for in wrestling for me to include him.
Man, Dylan, you could have had your face turned there, man. That could have been your big moment where you become the face of the company and you stayed heel. Man, that's
I can't help myself.
I know. It's okay. Well, guys, we're at the last wrestler, and I have a sneaking suspicion that we're all going to say that he has been phenomenal. You like that there? That's pretty good, right?
Hey,
hey, was that a Johnny Sorrow groan, Glenn? What was that? Come on,
Johnny Sorrow. No, I didn't drink a can of beer and then burp all over the microphone. So,
hey, to be fair, I talked to Johnny about that. He said that he was muting his mic, or he was muting the computer, but he didn't mute the mic. So he thought he was doing that in his own privacy. And so, you know, we'll forgive him for that. But okay, so of course I'm talking about AG Styles. You know, we've talked about guys who have debuted and had lackluster debuts or less than stellar performances on the main roster. AJ Styles didn't go to NXT. He doesn't have any NXT runs. He came into the main roster and, you know, with quite a bang at the Royal Rumble, right? Hugely over at that year's Rumble. Kind of had a decent feud with Jericho. Nothing blow away. We were at the Mania with Jericho versus AJ Styles. Just a match. Nothing great. Nothing horrible. And then he just goes on this tear where he just really, in my view, just became the best wrestler in the company. And no one else was even close in that time period. And that's my own personal take. But Devin, you're the one who picked him, so I'm going to kind of let you make the case for AJ. In that 1 year, year and a half now, I guess, he's on my list, man, easily.
Yeah, he's probably in my bottom quarter. He came into the biggest wrestling company in the world, and he was always sort of the one guy who never went. You know, like he was he finally came and, you know, there's always like, well, you know, what's WWE going to do to him? You know, is the bad booking going to hurt him or anything like that? And he overcame anything that like that. If really they haven't booked him poorly, but I think he became one of the most over guys, if not the most over guy in the roster within what 6 months? And that is a pretty damn good achievement. And not only that, but he became a good promo when he turned heel. He had two classic series, in my opinion. The Roman Reigns matches were amazing. in the spring, and the Cena matches, I know those are a little bit more polarizing. I think they're a classic series, even if they are worked in this sort of PWG-ish style. He became the most over guy in the roster within a year, and the best worker in the company, and a company that has a lot of really good wrestlers. And he's had an amazing year and a half. He's already got, like I said, classic matches on his resume with Roman Reigns, with Cena. The Ambrose feud was fantastic, and Ambrose is not somebody who I would call great at this point, and AJ had three or four really good matches with him. He has gotten better as a character, and as a promo. He is over as a face and a heel. He is great in the ring as a face or a heel. He is someone who anybody can like, and most hardcore fans and most wrestling fans like, because he's extremely athletic. So if someone is into athleticism, he's got that, and he's a really smart wrestler. He's good at selling. He's good at all the intangibles. He's been, his WWE run has been a huge success. And I was there at his debut at the Rumble, and that was the loudest pop I can ever remember hearing. That and the Hardys' return at Mania this year were the two loudest pops that I've ever experienced live. He is just becoming a huge star, and probably the number two star in WWE outside of Cena, as far as people who work, you know, semi-regularly or more. That's an incredible achievement, especially when you look at the WWE booking woes and sort of obstacles you have to go through there. He has overcome all of that very quickly, and that's a huge testament to him, and he's definitely in my list.
Excellent. Steve Williams.
The only knock I have on AJ Styles, and it's obviously not his fault, is longevity at the time we're putting together this list. He has about 18 months under his belt, and I'm just not sure that that's long enough to consider his, the historical context of this great run he's had. He's without a doubt, after the first 2 to 3 months of just kind of dicking around, he has just done outstanding work since then. If he makes my list, it will be on the low end, just because, like I said, it's just purely a time standpoint. He just has not yet put in the hours that other people have. And Glenn, I guess you're up.
Sure. I agree. I think he probably has to get in toward the back end of the list, if only because of the longevity issue. And I'm not going to blame him for the Shane McMahon feud. That's, you know, that's booking, and that's Shane, obviously, to blame for the awfulness of that match. That was just one of the worst matches that I've seen in a long, long time.
Wait, hold on. You're saying the Shane McMahon Mania match was one of the worst matches?
Yes.
Has Kevin Owens had a match that good this year other than the match with AJ?
Roman at the Rumble.
Okay, I'll give you that.
Yeah, that Shane-AJ match, I just think, was just embarrassing. Having Shane just fumble his way through everything. But I'm not going to blame AJ for any of that. So, the series with Roman Reigns, I think, was awesome stuff. The series with Cena, I was at SummerSlam last year for the AJ-Cena match. I ran myself ragged screaming throughout that whole match. I just got, you know, sucked in so much to that. So, I mean, everyone's talked about a lot of the highlights he's had. I think that gets him in, like, toward the very end of the list.
Okay. I actually enjoyed the Shane McMahon match on the Worst of the Worst show. Said it might have been the best match on Mania this year. And I was shitting on Shane McMahon, as Dylan can, and Steve, both of y'all were on that show. Not a fan of Shane McMahon, and I actually enjoyed that match. So when you said that, Glenn, I was like, oh my God, really? I was kind of surprised you said that. But okay, Dylan, wrap this up, man. AJ Styles.
I also like the Shane match, although I get why people wouldn't like it because of
things we discuss on the Worst of the Worst show. Namely, the fact that Shane working even with anybody is always sort of problematic. But to me, you know, I was in the building when he debuted. I was also at SummerSlam, and I was also at the Royal Rumble this past year when he had the match with Cena. And the reality is, for a guy who's been in the company for that little an amount of time, to have the big match feel that he has, when like to be able to be a guy who can debut with that sort of reaction at the Rumble, and then the vibe and the energy in the building being what it is for him versus Cena, the crowd already sees him as a legend, and he's been there for a year and a half. I mean, when the SummerSlam match happened, he'd been there for 8 months, and the crowd already saw him as a legend. I mean, the atmosphere in the building for that SummerSlam match with Cena was unlike the atmosphere for any Cena match I've ever been in the building for, and I've been in the building for Cena versus a lot of top guys. You know, and that was even more so at the Rumble. You know, I personally, I think doing that match and, you know, at the Rumble, whether you thought it was a smart move or not, I strongly question taking the belt off AJ there, since it had no purpose and no meaning whatsoever, and seeing a 16th title reign meant zilch. But, again, that's a booking issue. It doesn't really have anything to do with AJ himself. The reality is that AJ is treated as the face of the SmackDown brand. He has been for quite a while now. He's effectively treated as the top guy, even more so than Cena, really, with Cena being on a more part-time schedule. I mean, Cena is still sort of the top guy. It's kind of a weird dynamic, but AJ's right there with him. I mean, AJ is, other than Cena and maybe Brock, and I say, and I do think it's a maybe, he's the biggest star in the company right now. And that's for a guy that has a ton of stuff working against him. He's got the Southern accent that Vince hates. He's like, you know, 5'7 or 5'8 or whatever it is. He's, you know, coming in at almost 40 years old when he debuted. He's coming from a place where there's really no historical precedent for them coming in and pushing guys as top guys in TNA, which, yeah, I realize he wasn't coming straight from TNA, but that the TNA stink, if you will, was still on him. I don't think there's any question, regardless of the New Japan stint, that from a WWE perspective, that was still something they were thinking about. And despite all those handicaps, he almost immediately became one of, if not the top guys in that company, not just from an in-ring perspective, which I think he has been, not just from an overall character perspective, which I think he has been, other than maybe The Miz being the only other guy that I would think even be in the conversation over the last year, but also from a actual star power, being a guy who draws in fans, being a guy who gets those superstar reactions. I mean, he is at the top, absolute top tier in every single category that you can look at for this list, whether it be in-ring work, even promos, which he was never thought of as a good promo guy, but I think he's shown himself to be a good promo there, especially on shows like Talking Smack, where he's really excelled. Overall star power, overall character and presentation and portrayal, being able to work as a both a compelling and out-of-this-world babyface and heel, being able to deliver absolute classic matches, whether it be versus Cena or Roman Reigns, being able to deliver great TV matches. I mean, he had a match with Xavier Woods last year on a SmackDown. I like Xavier Woods, but you would never think Xavier Woods would have a 4-star TV match, right? And he does, because AJ Styles was in there and they killed it. And every single thing that you would ideally want out of a guy, AJ has going for him. He really has no negative at all from a, you know, if you're just looking at that, the sort of baseline categories that we're considering, whether it be intangibles, nuance, in-ring work, promos, character development, any of those things. And if you consider, you know, being a top guy important, which I do, at least partially, he's that guy too. So the only thing he has going against him is longevity. And while I do think you have to count it against him at least some, especially if you're in a head-to-head comparison with people who lap the field, so to speak, with him in that category, the reality is I cannot imagine leaving him off. He's already in the pantheon where if you left him off, it would feel like you were leaving out a critical part of the WWE story. And to me, that is the fact that he's been able to do that in a year and a half, if anything, makes me want to rank him higher. So
AJ will make my list. He'll make it fairly comfortably. Do I think he'll be top 20? No, that's where I think the longevity factor does hurt him. Do I think he'll be top 40? Maybe. I don't know. Will he be in my upper half? I would say absolutely yes. He just has too many clear positives over this run, and there's no holes in his game at all.
Yeah, I mean, he's been on fire, man. And I actually have him at 40 right now, Dylan, and that could go up. He's one of those guys where, you know, 6 months, man, he might be top 20. He might be fighting, you know, my man Mark Henry for that number 13 spot. Who knows, you know? So I've been impressed with AJ. He's one of the few people that I actually tune in to the modern product to check out. I mean, and that's been hard. The only knock I would say against AJ is that, and this isn't even a knock against him, it's a knock against the company, is that they didn't bring this guy in sooner so that we could have gotten some amazing stuff out of like AJ and Daniel Ryan, AJ and Punk, you know, AJ and Mark Henry during the Hall of Pain, right? Like, these are like dream matches. I mean, we saw AJ versus Punk and Bryan in the Indies, but I'm saying like on the big stage, like these are things that you just wish you got to see before. That's kind of like the only depressing part about his story, right? Is it should have happened sooner. He should have been there many years ago. Absolutely. Do you disagree with that?
No, I think that's absolutely true. I think you know. Still.
Yeah. And so I think with that, guys, man, we've been going at this for a while. Big super show here. Covered a lot of wrestlers. We covered 17 wrestlers today. And we only have a couple of more shows left. I know I got a tag team show I want to fit in. I want to definitely do that main event show. And we might even slip another show in where we just do like a hodgepodge of like wrestlers. Because even though we've done, this is our 11th show to date. Even though we've done 11 shows, we've already covered a third of the nominations. There's still so many guys to talk about. And I've been having a blast doing these four-year consideration podcasts. I want to thank all of you for hanging out with me today. The Hales brothers, Devin and Dylan. Even though my favorite brother, Dustin, isn't on the line, it's cool. You know, it's cool. we'll talk to him another day. I want to thank Steve for hanging out with me and being a podcast warrior. And, of course, Glenn. This is your third one, right? That you've done with this?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. So, and, you know, check out those previous ones I did with Glenn. You know, one of my favorite shows we did, Glenn, was the one on the women with Stacy from Australia.
That was really fun, yeah.
It really was. And I'm glad we got a chance to, you know, hype them up, because we typically overlook the women. I know I do. I mean, I told you during the show, I usually use most of their matches as piss breaks live. So, you know, I thought that y'all really did a good job of giving those candidates credibility for this list. So we only have a few more of these shows left, guys. I'm really excited to wrap this thing up. And for everyone that's listening, thank you and bye-bye.